All right, so as required by statute, the Board of County Commissioners is sitting today as the County Board of Equalization. So first we'll hear the appeal for schedule number R6251233. The first order of business is the swearing in of the petitioner. So I'll swear the two of you in first. So do you swear that the testimony you are about to give is the truth to the best of your knowledge?
Yes,
I do.
Thank you very much. I'll remind the assessor's office that you all are still under oath. I'm going to make a few introductory comments, so this will tell you kind of how it goes, and if you have any questions, let me know. The issue of today's proceeding is property valuation and or classification for assessment purposes, not property taxes. No discussion of taxes will be allowed. The assessor's office must produce information to support the basis and amount of the assessor's valuation of the property or classification if that is what is being contested. Where the comparable sales method is used, state statute provides that the assessor will determine value based on sales during the 18-month period ending June 30, 2018. Sales may also be considered in 6-month increments immediately preceding the 18-month period up to 5 years if there are insufficient sales to obtain accurate comparable valuation data. Smaller counties commonly use a 24-month period in order to obtain sufficient comparable sales data that better demonstrates the change in value from the prior level of value, June 30th, 2016. The 24-month period also eliminates seasonality from the sales data. Broward County uses a 24-month data collection period. The petitioner and the assessor should not discuss sales post June 30th, 2018, except in cases where it can be demonstrated that a contract for sale was completed prior to June 30th, 2018 and closed after June 30th, 2018, according to the original contract. Under Colorado law, the present value of your property cannot be considered. So the petitioner, you'll go first and present your evidence, and then you'll have the opportunity to cross-examine the representatives from the assessor's office after they have presented their evidence. The decision of this board may be appealed, and we will refer to that after the decision or motion has been made. If you've brought any exhibits that you wish the board to consider, you can hand those out, and please make sure that a copy goes to Deanna over here as well.
I have one for each of you.
Thank you.
One for the assessor's office. Good. And
yeah, I'll hand it over. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you very much. Bill, we'll let you go first, and if you want to go ahead and give us briefly an overview of your evidence.
Okay. My appeal is because the bulk reappraisal that was done for 2019 is unfair and inequitable, not because of the sales study the assessor or the appraiser did, but because the appraiser failed to consider significant remodels. The appraiser determined that all units, underline all, the 16 units in Winterwood, are valued at $275 per square foot. The appraiser did apply a grade modifier to unit 10 because there have been significant upgrades. The appraiser did not apply a grade modifier to units 3, 5, 9, 12, 15, and 16 to reflect the condition of these properties, these significantly remodeled properties as of January 1, 2019.
Will you just remind me which unit is yours?
13.
Thank you very much. Sorry to interrupt.
So over 40% of the units in Winterwood have had significant remodels. We've lived through all of those remodels since we've been there since we bought the property in 1997 and been living there as full-time residents since at least 2003. So by not applying a grade modifier to these significantly remodeled units, there's a disproportionate application of that $275. The significantly remodeled units get valued lower than what they should be, and that's not fair. And when the differential in value was tens of thousands of dollars, it didn't make much difference. But when the units now are differing in value by $75,000 or more, there's a real problem. Now, the assessor can't consider sales or listing prices in 2019. What they can consider is the condition of the property. And all you have to do is look at the pictures that are on the realtor's website and stuff to determine the value. The first, if you go past the assessor's report, the first one is Unit 5. Here's a color picture of Unit 5. They've added two windows, side windows beside the fireplace. They've significantly updated the kit. You can go through the whole series of pictures if you want to. It's not really necessary. I mean, here's the kitchen. I can't get to it because you'll have to look at your page. I mean, you can look at the kitchen on the next page. It's been significantly upgraded. All these factors were known. Now, when was this unit remodeled? Maybe 2011 or 2012. Unit 5 was done. The contractor that did Unit 5 also did Units 12, 15, and 16. If you turn to the next page, or the next exhibit, you got a nice color picture of what was done in the realtor listing of Unit 12. Surprise, same fireplace, essentially. Two side windows put in the end unit. Beside the fireplace, you look at the back of it, and you'll have pictures of the kitchen and everything else that was done. And these upgrades, although the listings were after January 1, 2019, the changes had been done long before that. So we have units that are significantly upgraded. No grade modifier was applied. And they're all 5, 12, 16 was redone by the same person. Has the same two side lights on it. You can go look from the exterior. You don't have to have an interior inspection to know that these units have been significantly modified, these three end units, 5, 12, and 16. 15 was done by the same person. One of the units that the assessor used, if we go to the next page, three, she used that as in her sales study. It was sold on April 20th, 2018 for $435. You go to the next page.
April 20th of when?
2018.
Thank you.
You go to the next page. This is the interior of that unit. They significantly remodeled it between April and January 1, 2019. It's on VRBO, and I've given you all the listings of it. So you've got listings on the realtor's websites of 5 and 12. Here's Unit 3. I haven't got listings or public documents on 15 and 16 because they haven't been sold after the remodels, but the remodels were done. So she valued, this was included in the study to say all units were $275. But if you look at the remodel and the advertising that they say, you know, all new and everything else about what they did, what should have been done, they should have looked at these photos. Even if they're available publicly after January 1, 2019, it's what the condition was on January 1, 2019, and then the appraiser should have taken those values back to what they were on June 30th, 2018. You can't ignore all the evidence of these significant remodels.
So I haven't heard you speak to the condition of your unit. Do you have photos of your unit?
No. I don't have conditions of my unit, but it hasn't been upgraded to the extent of 5, 12, 16 and these things.
Okay.
I was going to invite the assessor to come out and visit ours. We had a date set up. But our complaint is not with her evaluation of the assessed value of 275. The problem is that 275 doesn't differentiate between the significantly remodeled units and non-remodeled units, and that results in an unfair and inequitable appraisal. Now, the assessor, the appraiser, after the assessor sets his role, he can't change, as I understand it, the appraisals of these significantly upgraded units, except Unit 10, which had a grade modifier. But the failure to put a grade modifier on these other ones that I've listed really skews the fairness of our unit versus the significant remodeled ones. They're paying the same, they're being assessed the same square foot value that we are. And that's fundamentally unfair. The assessor can't change his, but you're the Board of Equalization. You're the appeal that I have and my wife has to correct this inequity. And either you move them down, either you move us down, which I'm asking for, or you move them up $50,000 or $75,000 to reflect these differences. And I'm asking you to do this in this hearing. The assessor can take all this information along with the appraiser and do something a mid-year or a mid-cycle correction for next year's appraisal. But somebody has to get these 16 units in some form of fairness. And it's not fair to value only Unit 10 with a grade modifier and not all these others. So I guess I'll reserve some time after the
thank you.
Appraiser.
Do you either of you have questions,
Mr. Jamison?
All right. Thank you very much. We'll have the appraiser's office or the assessor's office provide their evidence.
Okay. So for the 2019 reappraisal, I did have four sales out at Winterwood. There was Unit 7, Unit 2, Unit 11, and Unit 3. So I had concluded to a valuation of $275 per square foot. Unit 10 was listed as of June 30th, 2018, and based on the MLS information that I had available to me, I did apply a grade modifier to that unit because it was in superior condition to the ones that had sold. So during the assessor level appeal, the petitioner did provide to me the information that he presented here today, and I did look over the units that he had in question. So first of all, looking at my sales that I did have during the time period, each one of those had some level of updating or renovation, so my assumption was that all of the units there had some level. I did look at the units that had not sold during the time period to see if when their listing date was, if I could find a building permit or any information that would indicate to me that they had been remodeled prior to January 1. And the properties that the petitioner had me look at were all listed after the January 1, 2019 date. And looking back in my records, I didn't see any notes. I didn't see anything in any of the account remarks that would indicate that there had been a remodel completed. So because the assessment date is January 1, 2019, I have to go off of the information that I have available to me at that time. So I denied the appeal. If you guys want to look at the information I provided, there is that spreadsheet on, I think it's the second page.
So.
And that shows the sales that I had, the listing dates of the units in question. Also in the appraisal narrative that the petitioner provided, there is a description of those sales that I did use. For example, Unit 7 had new carpet, travertine, surround, tile countertops, remodeled bath. Unit 2 had tile flooring, slate fireplace, quartz bathroom, new carpet, stainless steel appliances, granite countertops. Unit 11 had granite tile countertops, new backsplash, new cabinets, new carpet, remodeled bath, granite top vanity. Unit 3 had granite countertops, updated lighting, and vanities in the bathroom. So my assumption is all of the units have some level of updating. So that's what I have to go off, the information that I have to meet as of the assessment date. And these were the four units that sold. I didn't have any other information based on the units that the petitioner provided that said to me that I needed to make an adjustment. The other case in point is that, you know, there are a couple of court cases stating that a petitioner can't appeal their value based on a neighbor's value. And I cited those on the last page of the information that I submitted to you guys. So I feel like the valuation of $275 a square foot captures the majority of the units in the valuation. And if there needs to be adjustments to units moving forward, then I will do that in the next reappraisal.
I would like to add a few things. Thank you.
Yes.
So, Winterwood, we have 16 units in there. I believe they're identical in size or close to it in size.
Yeah, there's one valuation
tier. We've always had one valuation tier.
That's due to the size, do I understand you correctly? Or
most often that's what valuation tier is based off of size, but sometimes it could be in unit or view or something like that.
Thank
unit
you.
Position that is the tier. But so Winterwood's going on 37 years old or something, 35-year-plus complex, and with so many of these complexes that we have that are getting to this age, and Robin has spoken to it, that you know, at some point, it's kind of a balance of what is the typical unit's condition in these older complexes, you know. And we use these grade modifiers to differentiate a value of a unit that is something different than what is typical for the complex. But on a 35-year-old complex, we assume that over the years, over the decades, units get updated, new carpet, new stuff. And when there's a significant remodel or a significant upgrade going from formica countertops and, you know, average run-of-the-mill appliances maybe to top-end appliances and granite slab countertops, that is not updating, that's kind of upgrading the unit as far as its finishes. So when we apply the modifiers, the grade modifiers, it should be done with a bit of caution and not sparingly, but only when the remodel is so significant that it's dictating that we have a considerable value difference going on. And it's somewhere in there, there's a balance or a shift where it's not a modifier going upwards for those really, you know, updated units or upgraded units. It's the ones that haven't been updated. And now we're, at some point, the appraiser has to kind of decide that, well, maybe the typical unit is updated and upgraded in their complex, and the ones that are dated are the ones that should have some kind of modifier to them. So then we would do a 10% modifier to them. My apologies. And so, you know, this is mass appraisal. Robin is responsible for about 6,500 properties. She does about 165 of these narratives. This particular narrative was done in October. She starts her reappraisal stuff in about September of the mass reappraisal. It takes about 8 months to really produce the mass appraisal. The court cases themselves speak to, you know, the petitioner is saying, you know, a fair and equitable valuation, and that is certainly the goal of the office, is a fair and equitable distribution of the tax burden. And we want to get the values right.
But as stated in that Bishop Court case, that, and I'm quoting here, while equalization on the basis of taxation is the end sought to be achieved by uniform laws and by uniform means and methods of assessment, perfect uniformity in actual assessment is not required either in the Constitution or the statute. It's basically saying that, and we have the state auditor that, you know, audits us by property class and subclass, subclass meaning duplexes versus townhomes versus single family, and that's where they're looking for uniformity of assessment. It's near impossible to get that uniformity down to the individual basis of 16 units in a single complex and knowing the conditions of each of them and stuff. So knowing that some of these units, my understanding, were remodeled right around the new year, you know, as of our assessment date, I know one listing came out January 19th, I remember seeing, was that unit still under construction January 1? You know, we don't know. She doesn't have time to look at every complex and do a physical inspection and look at VRBO sites. Every sale, we're getting the MLS pictures from it and stuff. I get them at my desk if they're listings. And when I see a unit that looks like significantly upgraded, I forward that email to the appraiser and say, hey, maybe this needs a modifier type of thing. Or if it's extremely dated type of thing. Just trying to make them aware of this discovery process, which is a difficult thing to do in mass appraisal with, you know, 25,000 plus taxable properties and 7 appraisers to do it. So
I have a question, Robin, for you on your I'm highlighting instead of scrolling here. Hold on. On your chart?
Yeah.
On unit 8, when it talks about the condition and it says original, am I to understand that to mean that that unit did not have any remodel?
That is what, when I looked at the information from what the petitioner gave me, that was my assumption, yes, that it didn't have a lot of remodeling done to it at the time.
Okay.
However, it did sell in February of 2019, so that's something I would have to look at the next reappraisal.
Okay.
Again, if that's a unit that's inferior to the majority, then that's something that can be adjusted downwards so that it's adjusted appropriately or valued appropriately.
Okay.
Just
thank you.
Sorry,
hold on. No, I'm asking questions.
Okay.
So Robin's, you'll have your opportunity.
Robin's spreadsheet is broken out into kind of two sections, and she's taking what the petitioner is saying is typical units. And that's where all the sales are at. They have a very tight range, 275, 275, 271, 271, as their time-adjusted sales price on a square foot basis. She has her comments in there about, you know, some of these being remodeled and stuff. And then the bottom half of that being these petitioner calling these significant remodeled units that have occurred and saying that, you know, they need to be at a higher value than his. And I don't think we dispute that. And as I had a conversation with the petitioner in the hallway a week or two ago. We had a good 10-minute conversation talking about all this. They've been noticed of their value. It's an undervaluation at this point.
Address that a little bit.
Okay.
Board of Equalization and then omitted property or whatever.
Yeah.
And what our options are.
So we have no omitted property here, so nothing can be done under those rules of omitted property. An undervaluation is an undervaluation, and it's stuck for 2 years till the next reappraisal. However, we do have a court case out of Denver that is very recent, a published case where the assessor had raised in the intervening year the valuation of the property due to discovery of a significant remodel. And the house had sold and stuff, but they ended up raising the value from like $800,000 to $1.1 million on the house because their inventory reflected a dated house. And it was my understanding of the case is that the extent of the remodel was so significant that the level of value that the assessor had on the property in the
reappraisal year versus going into the intervening year was simply at the wrong level of value. It did not reflect the reality of the condition of the property. So I think with these significant remodels, we could lean on that case and make an adjustment in 2020 to those three or four units that, if we deem them to be a significant remodel, like an upgrade, that we could send them a new notice of value in 2020. I think as the Board of Equalization, you guys could take it upon yourself to do it now and say, you know, we're going to put those at 285 a foot, 295 a foot, whatever number. I don't know how much evidence you have to go off of on that, but I think that the Board of Equalization could act on that if they wanted to.
I think it's, from my standpoint, I would rather take a look at those units and see how they compare to the sales that occurred during the time period. Mm-hmm. Because maybe significant remodel isn't that significant.
But, from the properties.
But at the end of the day of this CBOE hearing on the petitioner's unit itself, do we have his level of value correct? And I think based off the sales we have, I think the 275 number is solid. I think the petitioner has mentioned that there's been some updating to his unit as well. I believe there was a meeting arranged to see his unit, and then that was canceled. Robin, can you?
He spoke to that already.
So that's my question. The protection does exist. Had you had the opportunity to go inside of the petitioner's unit and view it, that you may have, depending on the condition of the unit, applied a negative modifier to lower the value.
Sure.
But you would have had to have seen it to have made that judgment.
But the initial appeal was not based on his value. It was based on neighboring values.
I understand.
Thank you. Other questions?
Yeah, so you get copies of building permits and the rest of the
yes, we do.
Don't know these things? I mean, I can't understand how these didn't fly. It's supposed to have a building permit on them. If you put new windows in and the rest.
Right.
And I don't know if all these remodels get permits pulled for them or not, but yes, the appraisers are to pick up the building permits and sorry, it's my daughter. That's part of our discovery process is the building permits.
So, but if there was no building permit pulled, you would have never seen.
Right. Nor known.
So, properties get looked at because they get appealed, they sell, they pull a building permit. Or there's anonymous tip of some sort as to there's something wrong with.
So that's my question, Rob. These three units and the petitioner's remodel unit, the three units that are shown with significant remodels.
Mm-hmm.
Do we know whether or not those three units have building permits?
I did not find a building permit for them. No.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Any other questions, Tim?
No, I'm good.
Nothing making sense.
All right, sounds good. Mr. Jameson, if you have questions for the assessor's office, you can ask those now. And I would just invite you, we understand your arguments. We don't need you to reiterate those again. But if you have clarifying questions or questions that you'd like to respond to the assessor's office, you can do that.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. The appraiser spoke to Unit 5, which was listed for sale on whatever the date was in early January. 19th. Do you have the evidence that the pictures on the listing were any different than on January 1, 2019?
The only photos I have are the ones from the MLS listing.
Do you have any evidence that they weren't representative of the unit on the date, January 1, 2019?
I'm not sure what you're asking me. I have the photos from the MLS, and those are the photos that I have as of the listing date. I don't have any prior photos unless I look back at another MLS listing.
But you have no evidence that this remodel was in a partial state of construction on January 1, 2019, and somehow they miraculously finished it 19 days later to the state shown in the MLS listing. Do you?
No.
Regarding Unit 12, the same question. That's the unit. Have a nice colored photo. bad listing, ghost listing photographs. Do you have any evidence that that did not, does not represent the condition of the property on January 1, 2019?
No.
Regarding Unit 3, do you have any evidence that the VRBO listing, which advertises this as a totally new, I'm sorry, an all-new unit, does not represent the condition of the unit on January 1, 2019?
I'm not sure what you're asking me to respond to. I don't know how you want me to answer these questions.
I'm gonna stop us here for just a second. I don't think that anyone here is contesting the condition of these units or what they look like. I think our discussion needs to be focused on the condition of your unit, and I understand that your argument is based on comparison to these units. I don't think anyone is questioning whether these units are nice and remodeled. What we need to understand is if these are significantly different your unit.
They are significantly
different.
So if
you would speak to that's the information we need.
Okay. Units 5 and 12, which are in the packet, are significantly different than ours. They've had major upgrades over the years compared to the upgrades in our unit. And that results, and as the assessor says, an undervaluation of those units, which results inherently in an unfair and inequitable reassessment of the property. And it's not just one or two units. It's 40% of the units. The assessor has no evidence that the units, these upgraded units, are any different than the one that, to which an upgrade modifier was applied in Unit 10. So if you apply the upgrade modifier that was applied to Unit 10 to these other ones, you would have a fair and equitable reassessment. But you asked a question regarding, I'm sorry, Ms. Mountain, you asked a question regarding Unit 8. 8 hasn't been sold. 8 was listed for sale approximately the same time. It has been on the market for months. It's currently under contract, and the difference in that listing price and the listing and sale prices of 5 and 12 are not insubstantial. You can't consider what the actual sales price was, but you can look at the photos of what the condition was and recognize there's a real reason these units are being sold at differing values. I'd ask my wife if she has anything to add to this.
Mm-hmm. At this point, I think what you need to speak of on the end units that have been added, the additional windows, that is a significant difference and visible from the outside that the appraiser could have taken a look at from the outside of the
property. We recognize the limitations of both reappraisals, the limitations that the assessor has in his office, the limitations that the appraiser has in the number of properties that have to be reassessed. But when evidence is presented to you that there's an unfair and inequitable assessment, that has to be addressed. And that's what we're asking to be done. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to go ahead and move us forward here. I think we understand the situation, unless either of you have any other clarifying questions you want to ask.
Okay. Not questions, just a couple comments.
Yes, would you like to start?
Sure. So two things. I think you've made a very good case that the potential is that we've undervalued those units that are near yours. That probably should have been valued higher, and I think we've heard as much that the assessor believes that that may also be the case. And then the other thing I would say, I don't think that you presented us with any evidence that your property is somehow less valuable than the comparables that the appraiser used, and that's why I previously asked a question, possibly if the appraiser had been able to get inside and look at your unit, and it was obviously significantly in poorer condition than I think we might be able to support your case, but as it is now, I'm agreeing with the appraiser.
I would echo those same two comments. I think that absolutely these units have been remodeled. It sounds like the appraiser maybe was not aware of all of those things and could evaluate those, but that they're really
that's not what's at issue here today, and that's not what we're considering doing. And then I would also agree that I have not seen any evidence regarding the condition of your unit and how it compares to these units. And I also don't see any evidence that we would adjust your valuation based on that.
You guys said it all. I guess the other thing I'd say as well is that the comparable sale, we don't have any comparable sales to fancy units in here. Highly remodeled ones. Even if we thought the 275, we only have the one sale on 417 and 19 for the 344 square foot. So I'm, and again, so whether we're going to base, you know, I guess we need to figure out how we're going to move these things up, and whether we can move these things up in some type of off year and the rest. I think it's fair and the rest. And so I think for right now, kick the can down the road. So, and Bill, I appreciate your thoughtful presentation too. So,
are you ready? I'll go ahead and do it. In the matter of account number R6251233, I move that we deny the petitioner's request and uphold the appraiser's valuation in the amount of $275 a square foot or $435,600.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you very much. Thank you for the reminder. The decision of the board can be appealed to the Robb County District Court, the State Board of Assessment Appeals, or through an arbitration process, and you'll receive a letter informing you of the board's decision and your rights concerning the appeal process.
Thank you.
No, we're not taking any other comments on this. Thank you very much.
I can send you an email. There were three sales of those upgrade units.
No,
2019.
Excuse me. Thank you.
We're off the record.
No, we're not off the record. We're still proceeding. 2:30, right? Okay.
So,
go ahead.
Off the record, I'm curious about.
Off the record.
We're off right now. I'm curious about that. The part that you just said.
That what's in here?
Okay. Yeah. Well, the non-integral narrative I sent to you, it's a public document. So
yeah, no, just in terms of what you provided to the commission.
It is also yes.
It's, okay, yeah. Just want to make sure. Yeah. I just got this pack, so I'm not entirely sure what's in it, but... so I can't really directly speak to this, obviously.
That's okay.
She just handed it.
It got posted, I think, Thursday or Friday.
Okay. Yeah.
Whenever we got it submitted.
We're going to go ahead and get started. Are all these microphones on?
Yep.
Okay, great.
I don't need two, do I?
Well, you know, you're extra special. We are hearing the appeal for several schedule numbers, which I'll read, R8164278, R8165860, R8164281, R8165318, R8165355, R8164275, R8164276, R8165857, R8164279, R8164284, R3205567, R8164283, R8164285. So the first order of business is swearing in of the petitioner.
Wait, I was trying to follow along, but did you read R8164280?
That is not on this list that's right in front of me. Am I reading off of the wrong document?
Yes, so we submitted that letter, and then we submitted an R8164280 subsequent to that, or it's on its own letter.
Which I have it on in my report.
But we actually
Hold on. Let me just find the right one,
okay.
And I'll read the right one. No problem. There's several lists in here,
okay.
So thank you for clarifying.
Do you guys know Deanna?
Yeah, we're recording, but we're she's not sitting there. all right. Let me just find the right document.
I'll show you what it looks like.
You can just hand me this one if you want. I know it's in there. It's just finding which page it's on. So did I read all of them that you were expecting except for that one?
I think so. I was trying to follow, okay. And it was more of a question than...
No problem.
It was on a separate notice of determination. It looked like this versus this one.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
And the reason it was separate is we were originally appealing the residential value as well of the residents, but we've now entered into a stipulation with respect to that.
I remember that one.
So now we're all just talking about non-integral for all 14.
Okay. So in addition to the properties just listed, or the accounts just listed, R8164280. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. And if any were omitted, we'll just refer to the list that's in the letter if I did miss any. We understand that it's the full list that was in the letter. Okay, so the first order of business is swearing in of the petitioners, and I remind the representatives from the assessor's office that they're still under oath. So I'll have the petitioners, please. Do you swear that the testimony you're about to give is the truth to the best of your knowledge?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you very much. I'll make a few introductory comments regarding the proceeding. The issue of today's proceeding is property valuation and or classification for assessment purposes, not property taxes. No discussion of taxes will be allowed. The assessor's office must produce information to support the basis and amount of the assessor's valuation of the property or classification if that is what is being contested. Where the comparable sales method is used, the state statute provides that the assessor will determine value based on sales during the 18-month period ending June 30th, 2018. Sales may also be considered in 6-month increments immediately preceding the 18-month period up to 5 years if there are insufficient sales to obtain accurate comparable valuation data. Smaller counties commonly use a 24-month period in order to obtain sufficient comparable sales data that better demonstrates the change in value from the prior level of value June 30th, 2016. The 24-month period also eliminates seasonality from the sales data. Rout County uses a 24-month data collection period. The petitioner and the assessor should not discuss sales post June 30th, 2018, except in cases where it can be demonstrated that a contract for sale was completed prior to June 30th, 2018, and closed after June 30th, 2018, according to the original contract. Under Colorado law, the present value of the property cannot be considered. The petitioner shall present his or her evidence first and have the opportunity to cross-examine the representatives from the assessor's office after they have presented their evidence. The decision of the board may be appealed, and we will refer to that after the decision or motion has been made. If you have any exhibits that you wish the board to consider, please distribute those now. Distributing to the secretary as well. So we'll go ahead and start. If you all want to,
Madam Chair, I might suggest that they introduce themselves by name.
Yes, please. If you would introduce yourselves for the record, thank you very much, and then you can present your evidence for us.
Well, you want to go first?
I am Michaela Rivera. I'm the attorney who's representing the owners of the 14 parcels that we're here appealing today. With me is...
David Clayton. I'm a real estate appraiser, and I'm appraising these properties on behalf of the property owners.
Thank you.
So I'll give some brief introductory remarks, and then we're just going to have Mr. Clayton testify as to his valuation, and then we'll reserve the rest of the time to listen to what the assessor has to say and to ask any questions that might be follow-up. I understand from what was said off the record earlier that you understand what it means to have a non-integral piece. Basically, have a piece that is valued solely as a residential piece, notwithstanding the fact that the remainder of the property is agricultural. So we're here just looking at how you value this 1 acre, non-integral acre, that is not in and of itself able to sell on the market. There's no real market piece that could ever be exposed to the market. So it's kind of a completely strange hypothetical thing that the appraisers and the assessor have to figure out how to do that, because this 1 acre is attached inherently to the rest of the acreage. In most of the cases with the Storm Mountain Ranch properties, they are part, this one non-integral acre is part of a 35-acre parcel. In a couple of the cases, there's a 70-acre piece. And the history of this is that we've been through
this before. We had a disagreement with the county before as to how to value this one-acre piece. I won't go into the details about the methodology that was taken in that the approaches that were taken by the county and by the appraiser for Storm Mountain Ranch at the time. But suffice it to say, there were two different valuation approaches that were presented in front of the Board of Assessment Appeals and then the Court of Appeals. And then in response to that, the Department of Property Taxation said, wait a second, we see that there's a lack of uniformity among assessors, and we don't think either one of you guys was doing it right. We don't think the county was doing it right. We don't think Storm Mountain Ranch was doing it right. So they drafted their own language, and I sat down with Joanne Groff and the director and her assistant, and I went to all the hearings, and I know Mr. Peterson was there as well. And I believe what their intention was and what the language says is that you need to value this 1 to 2 acre non-integral piece, and that's as big as it can be, using comparable sales of similarly sized properties. So the takeaway from that was you have to use comparable sales of 1 to 2 acre pieces in order to value this 1 to 2 acre piece. And it's as straightforward as that. And when we got the valuation from the county this year, and we collected and we got all the data that the county provided in support, it appeared that the county assessor was using sales of 5 to 6 acre pieces and then doing an allocation of value that those sales of 5 to 6 acre pieces, that actually 60% of that value was tied up in a 1 acre piece, and then using that allocation of the value of the sale price for the 5 to 6 acre pieces to value the Storm Mountain Ranch properties. We also saw that there were 1 to 2 acre sales in the county data that were not used, and that seemed to be contradictory to the directive from the Department of Property Taxation. It was, in fact, clear that those 1 to 2 acre sales would have been the appropriate ones. And so Mr. Clayton has done an analysis not only of the 1 to 2 acre sales and what value that yields for the Storm Mountain Ranch non-integral pieces, but also how if you use these 5 to 6 acre sales and just did a straight up pro rata what 1 acre of those 5 to 6 acre sales would be worth, because that's ultimately what we're valuing here, is 1 acre, what that would yield. So with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Clayton.
Right. So let me start out by just telling you that I'm not doing this on a contingency basis. In Uniform Standards of Professional Appraisal Practice recommends that I tell you that, because some tax appeals are done on a contingency basis. I have no interest in the outcome of this. I'm being paid on an hourly basis. So just so you know. The subject properties, according to the assessor, all of them except one is considered to have a one-acre non-integral building envelope. The one exception is the Richard Shrednecki parcel, which has a two-acre building envelope. And I don't know the reason for that. And maybe it's explained in this material that we were just handed, but I haven't read it. So that's one question I would have. But anyway, the rest of them are one-acre building envelopes. And the statute, and I'll quote, requires that the assessor should use comparable sales of similarly sized residential parcels to value the non-integral portion, similarly sized residential parcels. And then another portion of the statute indicates that the non-integral land of the subject property may not be greater than 2 acres. So they've given you a specific limitation on the size. And since they're asking the assessors to use comparable sales of similarly sized residential parcels, it seems to me that you should be using something in the order of 1 acre, perhaps 2 acres in size. The assessor has several sales in that size range that they provided us. They range in size from 1.01 acres to 2 acres, and those sold for between $120,000 and almost $300,000, with an average price of $192,071 and a median price of $157,500. And I think that's an appropriate, those are the appropriate sizes that the state has required. But the assessor, I disagree with the assessor, because they have gone and used sales that are bigger than that. They've used sales that range in size from 2.6 acres to 6.4 acres. And those are the comps they use for Storm Mountain Ranch. And those sales had a much higher price, and they ranged in price from a total of $590,000 to $1.7 million. And we broke that down on a price per acre basis to provide an allocation to 1 acre. And the prices per acre range from $88,000 to $339,000, with an average of about $184,000 per acre. And the median price was about $193,000 per acre. So that is my opinion as to what these non-integral building envelopes should be assessed at. The actual value should be closer to those numbers. And you have to also remember, and I think this is really important, this is not really a market. This is a hypothetical construct, and there's no such thing as these one-acre building envelopes selling in Storm Mountain Ranch. These are 35 acres, so you have to remember myself and Mr. Peterson and Ms. Finnegan are appraising what we typically would call market value, but these things are not saleable. So it's a bit of a hypothetical, and I think the state has tried to set up rules to deal with this hypothetical. And I think if you follow the rules accordingly, you would have numbers closer to mine than you would the assessor.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Would either of you like to ask any questions before we go on?
I might have some questions after.
Yeah, I'm going to do that. I want to know. We need to go through those comparable sales, the ones that were.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not.
Do you want me to specifically tell you about each of those sales? It wouldn't take long.
So that's the ones that were enlisted in your report, right?
You have my report?
Yeah.
Oh, we have
the report. Okay.
And it's got the
yep.
The one with the 1.7, the 895, the 1.7, and the 1.117. Oh, is that the number you're talking about?
Well, I'm talking about two different things. We're really doing two different types of analysis. One is on page...
Of my report. Yeah.
Hold on just a second.
He's on page 9. You're talking about the larger sales?
Page 7. Page 7 is the, if you turn to that, is the spreadsheet that shows the assessor's sales that ranged in size from 1 acre to 2 acres. And those are what I would consider the more appropriate comps because of the state's requirement.
Okay. Those came off of your report?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, all this data comes from the assessor, by the way.
No,
I didn't create any.
We're all good with that.
Yeah. So this is assessor data, and that table on page 7 represents those sales. So, one more thing. See where it says time-adjusted sale price?
Yeah.
That is the assessor's numbers. Those are the assessors.
Yeah, we got that.
Got
too.
It.
Okay.
Know about that.
Yeah. All right.
I have one clarifying question on your calculations.
Mm-hmm.
The assessor, and I know they will probably speak to this, but the assessor had valued each of these pieces differently. There
yes.
were different valuations,
they were
and
very
they noted that you are recommending a $175,000 valuation for all of them. Will you speak to why you don't believe they should have different valuations?
Well, I've seen all the properties. And they do have some variations, but I think for this, based on this rule, I think the size of the parcel is the most important factor. And you can disagree, and the assessor can certainly disagree with that, but that's my thinking.
Okay, thank you very much.
So again, back to my question, I want to make sure I want to understand we're looking at apples and apples on the 1 acres and whether they're buildable lots. And whether they're going to have water, sewer, and the availability to get a septic permit, period. Because they might not be a buildable concept anyhow. The second one that's listed here, what you need to make sure you present to us is that the second one listed here, Lot 8 Crawford, is a total of 35 acres.
Yes,
so
it is.
I'm really struggling. I understand the concept that you guys are referring to and what the ARL has come up with, like-kind property, and so we want to make sure that where like-kind property is even a buildable parcel. So
we're prepared to speak about that.
Yeah.
All right. Thank
you.
Can we let's let the assessor's office speak, and then we can.
Okay.
I'm sure there will be questions. Right.
I will be starting out, and then I will let my appraiser, Angela, speak to the valuation process and her conclusion value. So I want to start out with, and I'm going to be focusing on on the submittal of Storm Mountain Ranch by Michaela to you guys, to your office, for the CBOE hearing.
Can you refer to page numbers for us as you go through?
Mr. Clayton's report, basically. I have down here highlighted, and we're on page one of that report, and basically the last sentence of that second paragraph under the account numbers. In the prior case, BA determined that it was proper to determine the value of the 1 acre portion by first valuing the entire parcel, then applying a prorate evaluation to the 1 acre site. Court of Appeals agreed with this valuation methodology. What came about from these hearings, the appeal to the appellate level, the case got remanded back to the BA to remand back to the assessor to apply an acceptable market approach to value and make judgments or individual adjustments to each parcel for individual characteristics of each parcel. They didn't like the idea that each parcel had the same value to it, or these 1 acre building envelopes, and they certainly didn't like the valuation that was assigned by the BA at $60,000 per parcel. So that is kind of the history of what was sent back to us on that remand from the appellate court. We did that. These cases ended up in stipulation for tax years 12 through 15. We used the Jet Black case to kind of use that methodology to come up with what was a acceptable base rate to apply to all the 14 improved parcels, and then the percentage adjustments were all stipulated and agreed upon to come up with the value. Then there was talk of the Division of Property Taxation. They had the auditor look at the uniformity of how these properties are being valued across the 64 counties. Michaela had spoken to that. And out of that was a desire to give better clarity to the assessors in the ARL language as to how you value these properties. And we were asked to stipulate our 17 and 18 values to clear the path so that there was no pending litigation to uphold getting that language passed. So we stipulated again in 17 and 18. We took our base value from $500,000 to $250,000 so that the DPT could move forward with the process of going through the statutory advisory committee to get approval to change the language directing the assessors how to value these hypothetical 1 acre envelopes. So the old process was we were using the larger 35 acre lots and applying a ratio analysis of comparing a 35 acre to a much smaller 1 or 2 acre lot to see what the building envelope or the right to build, which is the intrinsic value of any of these properties, these residential rural properties, they all have one thing in common. That is, you can build one house on it. Doesn't matter if it's 1.3 acres or it's 39 acres, 47 acres, 20 acres, you get the right to build one house. And that's a very valuable stick in the bundle of rights to develop a house on that property. And that's where the bulk of the value lies on these properties. These properties do not sell on a price per acre. They are not marketed. They are not sold on a price per acre. They are sold on a site value. We see it all the time where 12 acres may sell for a higher value than 35 acres that's down the road a mile. Why is that? It's got great views, or it's got good topography with good aspen groves, or it's on the river or something. They don't get priced on a per acre value. That happens if it's starting about 150 acres or so. So we were tasked with, and what the new ARL language says, is treat these as standalone parcels, as if they are buildable on their own, exist on their own, and use similar size properties to value them. So it's the market approach to value. Market approach is substitution. You substitute a similar property to the subject and what that property sold for. You get into the details of it, and you're making adjustments for differences in one property and the next to the subject. But nowhere in the statute, nowhere in the ARL, does it say that the sales you use have to be 2 acres or less. It says that the land that you're going to reclassify from agricultural to a residential classification shall be no more than 2 acres, or up to 2 acres shall be reclassified. You see it in two different spots in statute. You see it in the definition of residential land, and you see it in the definition of agricultural land. And that's in Angela's report.
It's on page 3.
Page 3 of her report. You will see that. The issues with Storm Mountain Ranch's expert appraiser that they've hired to develop this report for you today, as I see it. Start with what I just spoke about. They're insisting that we're not supposed to use anything over 2 acres as comparable competing properties to the Storm Mountain Ranch property. So under that methodology, if you will, if I had a sale out there of a house or vacant land that was 1.4 acres out in the rural property, and I got a house or another vacant lot across the street, but it's 1.8 acres, I can't use it. It's bigger than the subject. It's very similar, same access, same location, same utility, but it's 0.4 bigger. I can't use that property because they're saying the statute says up to 2 acres, and 2 acres only is what I'm to reclassify as residential. So I can't use a sale that's bigger than 2 acres. And out in rural Route County, finding 2 acres that's a buildable lot is a rarity. And that's what I'm trying to find to value a hypothetical 1 acre buildable parcel, standalone parcel. And it is buildable because it has a house on it. So it has exercised that stick that is the bundle of rights. It is, so they've exercised the development right on that 1 acre property. So that is the intrinsic value of that lot. And is it 1/35th of the value of the $3 million Storm Mountain Ranch parcel of the 70 acres? But I'll let Angela get into that. So on page 7 of the Mr. Clayton's report, he lists 7 properties. Lot 25, Fox Estates, right next door to Storm Mountain Ranch. In fact, I think it's almost contiguous to one of their parcels. 1 acre, beautiful, beautiful thing. But part of that theory of substitution is, we have this in Exhibit 1, the ARL speaks to it a little bit, I think Angela's quoted it, and I'll let her get into it. The theory of substitution is comparable sales. Part of the meaning of comparable is competing properties. What a prospective buyer of Storm Mountain's 1 acre building site, what are they looking at as competing properties to that? And I don't think Fox Estates, with its dirt roads, lack of any amenities, high density of about 1 acre per property out there versus Storm Mountain, I think is a density of about 42 acres to every building site, is a truly competing property. But it's right next door.
Is it not an LPS as well?
Fox Estates is not an LPS, no. And we have a nice pair of sale that shows you that the intrinsic value is in the right to build, because right behind Fox Estates is a 40-acre parcel. And this sold about 10 years ago, and its sale price was only about 30% higher for 40 acres than the Fox Estates sales that were 1 to 2 acres each, and we had about 3 of them. It didn't sell for 40 times more. Why is that? Because these things don't sell on a price per acre basis. And the intrinsic value of these parcels is the right to build a house. That 1 acre gets one house. That 40 acres gets one house. There's no difference there. It's all just surplus land after that. Okay? The second sale, Mr. Clayton's report. Schedule number R816-9812, legal distribution, otherwise known as part of Lot 8, Crawford Ranch, tax area 19, total 35 acres, listed 1.4 acres. He was asking why we weren't using that as part of our sales. That's not a 1.4 acre parcel. It's 35 acres, Mr. Clayton.
I'm sorry.
It's a 35 acre parcel. It's split by tax area.
Sorry, if I'm understanding you correctly, you're saying that sale number 2, Crawford Ranch, is a 40 acre?
It's a 35 acre parcel, and it's closer to Oak Creek than it is to Storm Mountain Ranch.
This is right out of your data.
Yeah. It's a property tax split. It's split by tax area. So we have to have 2 schedules for it. So it shows up as a sale in both, and I believe it was invalidated under the 1.4 sale.
Your own data had it just as it's printed on my page.
Yes, because it shows up as a property schedule with a sale to it.
I'm just telling you what I got. That's the source of my data.
Yeah, I can agree that we should have had that in red as an invalid sale.
But you didn't.
And we have the other parcel, I think, is valid, and we have the full 35 acres assigned to
that. Can't help you. I'm using your own data.
Okay, that's fine. But it doesn't change the fact that I think your geographical...
Yeah, let's keep going, please. Okay. Thank you.
So Elk River Estates, again, this is a MRE where density is 2 to 3 acres per building site. Dirt road, Steamboat Hills, same thing. Density there is right around the same, less than 2 acres per building site. Country Green comes close to competing with Storm Mountain Ranch. Elevated views, it's a nice little neighborhood. Recently got paved roads in the last 5-6 years. And that last one, Meets and Bounds, is adjacent to Sydney Peak Ranch. 2 acres, flat ground. Got some old buildings on it, granaries. Not sure of the history of that sales confirmation, but we have a sale there of $280,000.
So do we have you guys even written? Can I ask?
That would be fine, yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
So basically, we just believe those are not truly competing properties for a prospective buyer of Storm Mountain Ranch to. That they would be looking at.
So back to where I was going to ask him, so you've explained everything but the last one. Do we even know that that's a valid sale, that that's got a buildable rights on that?
Yes. Yeah, it was confirmed valid qualified sale.
Yeah, I don't believe mind that. I want to make sure that there's a house on it. That's, no, it's a legal split.
Yeah.
Did it get split?
I think I think it
goes way back into the 50s or something.
Okay, that's fine. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. that's all I have to say on the statute, the valuation of it, the errors I'm seeing, and I don't think Mr. Clayton is using truly competing properties to a Storm Mountain Ranch parcel. And I believe we are using the bigger acreages. Angela will speak to how we extract out the surplus acreage to come up with what kind of is the indicated value of the 1 or 2 acre building envelope. We value these on a site per basis. So Mr. Shrednecki's property, you do have 2 acres on his, 2 acres because of the ponds he has on the property, his driveway, the large scale of his house and the manicured lawn and stuff, it just takes up 2 acres. We don't apply a different value. The base rate is the same as all the 1 acres because it's a site value. The size of the building envelope is not that critical. As long as we're below 2 acres that we're reclassifying from ag to residential. But these are being valued on a per site basis because that's how they sell in the marketplace. And that was part of the original language of the ARL. Value them as if how they sell in the marketplace, per acre, per square foot, or per site basis.
Thank you.
Angela.
So, should I walk you through how we started valuing these in 2017, as far as our, how we go about doing that, looking at the sales?
I don't think we need to talk about the past. We already heard that was all created by stipulation, so let's talk about how
I agree. Yeah,
we started doing it in 2017.
Okay.
So we're doing it the same way as 2017.
Okay.
I think whatever would help us understand how you arrived at the valuation in here would be great.
Okay. So we confirm all of our sales, and then I look at all smaller acre parcels, which is limited, especially in the county.
Did you give a ballpark about how you're defining smaller acreage?
We did expand. We spoke to Kurt Settle to make sure it was okay that we did use larger parcels, like 5-6 acres. So I think we used 8 and under, or maybe 10 and under.
Okay, thank
acres.
You. That's.
And then we looked at, okay, I have 30, 40 sales. These are similar. So on page 34 of my report.
Yep.
Give me just a second to find it.
So we have
a really long, okay. Let me find the document. So, did you find it, Tim?
Yeah.
What's the number in our packet of that?
I don't know. I downloaded the PDF from the website.
Oh, yeah. Mine's 800 pages.
But the pages are numbered at the bottom right-hand corner of each page. So
I know. I
just page 34.
It should say page 34 of 49, because my report's 49.
I found it a minute ago.
It's like the first table that you run across.
Well, this is all the statute. Is it in there before or after this?
No, it's coming.
Okay. Oh, there it is. All right, Doug. Page 360.
What page number?
360.
360 is where my report starts. Excuse me, I didn't refer to that.
That's where this is.
Oh, that's where that is. Okay,
that's where that specific page is.
I'm sorry. I'm confused. 360.
Wow, you see the relative.
It's our full packet.
Okay, so what you're referring to is 34 of.
Yeah, you've got the right
okay.
Page.
Okay.
So just your. Yes.
Yep.
That would be the SM20-60.
So we're going to wait a second and help let Commissioner Monger get there.
Yeah, get to good help there.
I know. It looks like this. So go down a little further. Oh, yeah, so yours is going to be 30. What number is that?
Page 34.
34.
Okay, we'll go ahead.
34 in that packet.
Yep. Do we have a
different
version time?
We'll find out, won't we?
No, the difference is that we, as commissioners, we either have the opportunity to download the entire packet for all of
yeah. these. She's just asking at what time we have
I'm
to
just wondering if
here.
We're if we have to hard stop it.
We do have one at 3:15.
We are going to try, but we are not going to be done in 8 minutes.
Yeah, I think so. Okay.
So we're just going to try to keep moving, and we will do the best we can.
I will try.
But it is not
we
a hard
can
stop,
work
no.
over, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So between page 34 and 39 are all my small acreage sales. And I grouped them as far as, like, what types of property they best, you know, are comparable to for my unsold. because we have, I think, about 625 non-integral properties in the county that these sales have to value. So, like on page 34, super neighborhood 20 to 60, those are going to be rural, you know, dirt roads type properties. Super neighborhood 80 to 130, that's going to be like the Country Green, a little closer to town, Strawberry Park area. Then on page 35 is Ayot Creek, Quarry Mountain, and Big Valley Ranch non-integral. Until you get to page 37 is the sales I used for Storm Mountain Ranch.
So those above are what? I mean, those ones that you just walked us through.
These are other properties that get non-integral building envelopes that I need to value.
Other model areas.
Yes,
I understand.
But they were not used in the model that you used.
Not for Storm Mountain Ranch.
Thank you.
So Storm Mountain Ranch, I used the six sales above on page 37. I did adjust for surplus acreage. We looked at historical sales and came up with ratios. And those sales are on page 40 to 42. And if you look at the bottom of page 42 is where the median and average, it all came to around 65%. So it's telling me that a building envelope is about 65% of the value of a property, looking at historical sales and...
Say that statement again.
So it's saying that the right to build, that stick in that bundle,
yep,
accounts for 65%. And that extra surplus acreage is 35% of the total market value.
In this particular super neighborhood?
All over the county, all neighborhoods.
Okay, thank you.
So that 65% statement is for all of those.
It's applied everywhere for valuing building.
And then you separated the areas in different super neighborhoods, whatever.
But it's huge.
Based on the assets that it brings to its whole neighborhood.
Yeah, it's an adjustment for that surplus land. What is?
Yeah, we're good.
Okay. Yep, that makes sense.
So we did not. We did only use properties that had limited or no amenities, and that's why Marabou sales are not used. So like the Catamount Ranch, Dakota Ridge, Ayot Creek, and even Alpine Mountain Ranch has very limited amenities as of right now. So those. That's why we chose to use those. The median came to 586. So I set Storm Mountain Ranch's building envelopes at a base rate of 600,000. Now, I did the same methodology for 2017. It's just because we stipulated it would have been 500,000 for 2017. But the stipulation, which Gary mentioned earlier, we stipulated to 250.
Just to be clear, we didn't stipulate to your methodology.
No.
In 2017.
No, we stipulated
the value.
Just
okay.
The value.
We did not. We always reserved every right.
Right. Yeah.
Thank you.
So I also looked at Storm Mountain Ranch's historical sale, vacant land sales, which is on page 48 of my report, which I think demonstrates that Storm Mountain Ranch also does not sell on a price per acre basis. I highlighted the single 35. So Storm Mountain Ranch has three types of properties, single 35 acres, single 70 acres, and twin 35s. So the 70 acres were broken into the twin 35s so that they could, it would allow them to build larger guest homes. I think it was in 2003 or so.
Yeah.
Or 2000, maybe. So if you look at the highlighted single 35s, they sold like in October, on October 13th, 2000, sold for $2.65 million. And a month earlier, a twin 35, so an extra 35 acres, sold for $2.7 million. So I think that demonstrates why a price per acre isn't really the best way to go about valuing that.
Those are the ones highlighted in yellow on that?
Yes.
Sorry. Thank you.
The two single 35s are highlighted in yellow, and she's referring to the sale above the highlight. That's two 35-acre, but that's one owner.
So this whole list is sales.
Yes.
This is just Storm Mountain's historical sales of vacant.
I got it. Thank you.
So now I also, for the purpose of this hearing, I did look at valuing Storm Mountain Ranch's properties using small acre sales. And I didn't have any in this reappraisal data collection period, but we can go back 5 years. And the best comparable are cabins at Lake Catamount. They're about half acres.
Point four,
yeah. And I did have two in the 2017 reappraisal. One sold, let's see, lot 9, 0.42 acre, sold for $649,000. Lot 10, 0.4 acre, sold for $749,000. I also do have my time trend analysis. I did not have a time trend statistically.
So that included those 2.4s, mm-hmm. including the land and improvements.
No, these
are
vacant sales.
And they do not include the membership. You have to purchase the membership to Catamount separately for those.
Okay.
So if we were to do a price per acre, these are half acre parcels.
I'm sorry, that's not in a, we're not going to see that in a table.
No, I just have it in the second half of page 4.
Okay.
She lists method 1
right.
and method 2. Yeah.
But we did not apply method 2. This was just strictly done for the purpose of,
yes,
just kind of a demonstrating why a price per acre does not always work. Because
price per acre is economies of scale. As you go up in acres, the price per acre goes down. You get real tiny, you're going to have big prices. All these properties sell on a per site basis. People are buying it for the attributes of the site, of the building site. Cabins at Lake Catamount have a pretty high density when you look at the entire subdivision and the 500-acre private lake that they sit around. The majority of the subdivision is these big 35 to 50-acre parcels. And she just put together this method to address the petitioner's methodology of saying these should be priced at price per acre and we should stay under 2 acres per lot. So if we look for 2 acres, that's a very unique property to find in Mount County outside of city limits that would be competing with Storm Mountain Ranch for a buyer. So we'd have to go back 5 years to try to find that. We actually have one. We have one of these lots that sold in the next time period coming up. I think it sold for $800,000. We have $650,000 and $750,000 for 0.4 an acre. You apply the per acre basis to that, and we should be valuing these 1 acre building envelopes at Storm Mountain Ranch at $1.5 million.
Anything else that you
want? I'll just wrap up. So we recommend denying the petitioner's request for lowering the value, or if we choose to do a price per acre, to adopt method 2, which would raise the base lot value of $700,000, which is the average of the two Lake Catamount sales. Given that I didn't have a time trend, there wouldn't be any. And then there was one other thing. We did stipulate for the residents on our 816-4280, so that's just the building envelope we're talking about. On our 816-4278, that one is just ag land, so there is no building envelope. So I guess we recommend that we deny that in a separate motion because there's no building envelope on that property, which I do have the property record card if we wanted to.
Which property is that?
It's Heckman. He doesn't have a house.
So why do we have an integral on something that doesn't have a house?
No, it doesn't have one on it.
Doesn't have
one. There's no building envelope. I have the property.
And so it's all A?
Yes.
Okay.
So
can you give me that number?
Yes.
So I can make sure.
It is 816-4278.
Yeah, that shouldn't have been in there.
Okay.
Either.
Thank you.
Do you want to
ask, do either of you want to ask questions now, or we
so
want to turn
I
it back
go
to,
back to the
Storm Mountain?
Method 2 and the rest of those ones at Lake Bethlehem, I assume that they also include central water and central sewer.
I would assume so.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have a question for Ms. Rivera.
Mm-hmm.
In Mr. Clayton's submission, there's the alternative method for valuing these properties using larger acreage properties. But I guess, isn't that a moot method, given the fact that you've rejected the use of parcels greater than 2 acres for evaluation purposes?
I actually was going to address that point that Mr. Peterson, I think that's a mischaracterization of our position. What we're saying is that that you're supposed to use sales as close to the 1 to 2 acre size if they're available, and they are available according to the data that the assessor provided. And we disagreed with the fact that those were ignored and only the larger sales were used. So I think a comprehensive analysis might have included those smaller sales as well as the ones that apparently from a quality perspective, at least the perception is that those are closer to the Storm Mountain Ranch site. So that's why we included the alternative analysis. It wasn't so much we disagree that the 5 acre sales should be used when there are one in rejection of the lower sales, but I don't think it's true that only 1 to 2 acre sales should be used. It's where the market data is completely unavailable. And the fact is there are 1 to 2 acre sales out there that are available, and you can make adjustments. If they're not as good as Storm Mountain Ranch, you can adjust those, but they were completely left out of the valuation, and I think they need to be included. But here's the other sort of misperception. Our biggest issue is not necessarily with the use of those 5 acre parcels, although we have concern with those. It's this excess surplus land analysis. That is not in any appraisal methodology textbook I've ever seen. I haven't ever seen any appraiser ever use it in any situation. Mr. Clayton, I don't know if you've ever seen this excess land analysis. They used it in the 2012 case, and that was what the Board of Assessment Appeals rejected. They said that was not a valid market-based approach, this surplus land analysis. It is even
looking
at
that. Did they
not
also reject the per acre analysis?
No, they didn't.
At the same time.
They have accepted the per acre analysis. That's what they wanted. What the Court of Appeals said was you need to go back and show your math. Use an acceptable market-based approach, but show the basis for that. That's why you have the concurring opinion that in the Court of Appeals decision that entered it on a different basis. The concurring opinion did, but not the main majority opinion. I want to just point out on the surplus acreage ratios, it is completely arbitrary to be putting these sales together, these paired sales. They are not identical in every respect. In order to do a paired sale, a perfect paired sales analysis, I can let Mr. Clayton, he's the appraiser, speak to this. You have to have sales that are completely identical in every respect, and then you know that one factor that they're different on, being size, then that's the indication of what value that different size has. Furthermore, when you have a range here, you've got 35%, 116%, 164%, 27%, numbers that vary so wildly. All that is an indication that this approach is arbitrary, can't be properly vetted with real market data. And granted, I just got this data. I asked the assessor on at least 3 separate occasions for all the data that they use in basing their opinion.
I sent you that. I emailed you.
This one I did not get. We never got that.
Okay,
I never got it either.
I never got it. I got the stuff that preceded it.
Yeah, that was sent to her.
But I think you can go through and you compare any 2 sales and figure that out. This is an inherently flawed analysis. I'll let Mr. Clayton talk about whether this is a normal, acceptable appraisal methodology.
If the idea is correct, in other words, you're measuring a single variable. Let's say you've got a 3-bedroom house versus a 4-bedroom house, and they're right next door to each other. They're made the same. Everything's the same except the bedroom. This one sells for $100,000. This one sells for $120,000. Everything else is equal. Well, that $20,000 represents that extra bedroom. That's a paired sale, and that's what the county's trying to do, the assessor. But the problem is, and it's obvious, these are not really paired in the sense that all things are equal except for size. Some have views, some don't have views. Some are wooded, some aren't wooded. Some may be on the river. They're not even in the same subdivisions. So there's bound to be many, many variables there that the assessor did not take into account. And, you know, you...
So we all agree with that.
So
we understand that yours didn't meet.
No, yeah, no. I was just going to say that would be the question that I would ask.
No, first of all, the alternative method is what you're referring to. Remember, my primary method was not an appraisal.
And actually, that was the question I was going to ask. Using your primary method, do you consider those paired sales?
Paired?
Yeah, the same way that you were referring to the lack of paired sales on the part of the assessor. I mean, it's hard to imagine that you have presented something that is
Let me ask you a question. There's a clarifying question there, I think. There's a difference between a paired sale and a comparable sale. They're two different things. So maybe you can...
Yeah, it's not a paired...
We're not doing a paired sales analysis with this ratio analysis. We're simply looking at, 35 acres to a similar small acre is to demonstrate that it's not a price for a valuation.
Stop. We're not going to do all of this back and forth. It's Mr. Clayton's turn to speak, and we'll give each person an opportunity one at a time.
And we try to be very brief in our presentation, by the way. So on my primary method, I'm not using a price per acre, okay? My primary method is exactly what the assessor reported. It's the price per lot, and the lots are between 1 and 2 acres. And the statute says you use sales that are similar in size. Doesn't say you use sales that have good views or similar views or sales that have, you know, river versus not river. It says sales of similar size. That's my primary method, and that's the one I would stick with. The second method is just an alternative way to look at it because it's based on their sales.
Can I ask a question?
Can I just say one comment?
So go ahead.
That's
and
I was going to say that... I didn't mean to label these paired sales, but in order to gather anything meaningful about whether or not there is that you can sort of discard some value of this surplus land or adjust from that, these would have to be perfectly paired sales. In other words, they would have to be exactly alike in every other respect except for size. But because they are not, and Mr. Peterson just said that they're not paired sales. They're just ones that are as good as they could get. That this you can't get anything reliable or meaningful about this surplus acreage here. And that was that's been the problem all along, this surplus acreage. There's no meaningful market data that you can use to allocate these 5-acre sales, most of the value, to this 1-acre piece. And I know that this is an inherent problem with this whole analysis, is that we're trying to value something that just inherently doesn't exist in the market. No one can go out to Storm Mountain Ranch and buy 1 acre. You just can't do it. So if you
buy one here, the rest of Rock County, you just can't build on it. It's the one piece of property.
Yeah, I mean, wouldn't that be nice? But the fact of the matter is, when you buy your buildable envelope, whether it's part of 35 acres or 10 acres or 15 acres, you're buying something else with that. It's density, it's lack of density, it's the ability to look out and see nothing. If that's what you want, there's a premium to that. And that's why it's so hard to figure out to take properties that are inherently comparable to Storm Mountain Ranch and figure out what one little piece of that property would do. And that is what that impossibility is why we got this really odd, inherently hypothetical, but easily applicable direction from the Department of Property Taxation, which is use similarly sized properties. And we have them here. And you can make adjustments to those 1 to 2 acre sales for other things. That's perfectly within the normal realm of an appraisal process. And it's within your ability to do that too. But what the methodology that was done here, albeit interesting and creative, was not what was directed here. We can do what was directed here because inherently, if you veer from that simple approach, we're going to have all these problems and we're going to be arguing about this data and we're going to be in front of the Board of Assessment Appeals and arguing about whether this accurately does show how much surplus land is or isn't worth, because you can attack each and every one of these sales. And this is going to result in no uniformity. And that's the problem. We need to have uniformity across the county.
Hold
that's
on,
what this
just a second. Thank you. This might be our next calling it.
Hello? Wait, I still want to ask my question.
All right, he's got his question.
The commissioner is very patient.
We stay on hold for to stay on the line. We're still hearing the other hearing right now. So.
So, you're asserting that because of the way the language is written in statute and in the DPT's instructions, we don't have the ability to make a judgment regarding the difference of value between a building lot and Storm Mountain Ranch and a building lot outside of Oak Creek of similar size.
I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is you can't take, and I'm not sure, I don't know, I'm not familiar with Oak Creek, so I apologize.
So just, I would say Oak Creek would be a much lower socioeconomic profile, a much less desirable place to live.
I'm saying you have to take a pure comparable sales analysis, which means you got to take these smaller lot sales, and we got 1 to 2 acre sales, and we got some 5 acre sales, and you make your normal adjustments. They're superior to Storm Mountain Ranch in this respect. Maybe they have some curb and gutter or whatever that Storm Mountain Ranch doesn't have, but they're inferior in this other respect. They don't have the same views, and you do a normal adjustment process in the straight up comparable sales methodology that's accepted and applied in courts and by appraisers everywhere. What I'm saying is that there's no flexibility to do this, what the assessor did here.
So we might very well be able to arrive at the same value with a different methodology.
Perhaps. But we think that the normal methodology gives...
That's the question I have.
I have a
clarifying question regarding what you've just stated, and I think this question is for Mr. Clayton. Am I correct in understanding that the methodology it sounds like you're now proposing is not what was used in your appraisal report?
I don't know. I don't think she's proposing a method. She's saying that adjustments can be made. And I don't have a problem with that either, but the statute talks about size.
So my question, I understand. My question was, did you make the type of adjustments that she's referring to in your report?
No. Yeah. I took every sale that they presented between 1 and 2 acres, regardless of location and whatnot.
Okay.
And because that's what the statute talks about, size.
Yes. I understand. Thank you for that clarification. Go ahead, Gary.
So Michaela's saying we should be using whatever it is, as long as it's under 2 acres, and make all the adjustments in the world to get it up to a Storm Mountain. So we're going to have to adjust for density. Take the comp that is one building envelope per 1 acre and bring it up to one building envelope per 42 acres. There's one big adjustment that you're not going to find out in the marketplace very well. Then I got to make an adjustment for it. Can't put a vault on, or the comp needs a vault because it's under 5 acres. The subject does not. Then we have paved roads and not paved roads. Then we have central water and sewer, or we have fire suppression in the subdivision of Storm Mountain Ranch. We have the common area amenities. We have the location. We have so many things that comes into a plethora of adjustments required, where the analysis of taking a 5 acre, 7 acre competing comparable subdivision to Storm Mountain Ranch and making an adjustment to that sale for the surplus acreage is one adjustment. And that can be measured, as sloppy as it looks, looking at all those various things. We're just taking the middle ground, that median point of things that range 112% down to 10%. The middle ground there is 35%. And taking that one adjustment to it and discounting that property by 35% of its full parcel value is a lot simpler and I think supportable adjustment than trying to make a half a dozen or better significant types of adjustments to come up. And where you're going to end up at the end of the day is right back at $600,000 a building.
I have one comment to that. The problem with that is the Storm Mountain Ranch parcels, this is how you can't really, this is why you can't, once you go down that slippery road, it's too hard because now all of a sudden you're saying, well, there's surplus land on the comparables, so we got to adjust that out to determine what the 1 to 2 acre piece at Storm Mountain Ranch is. But you already have that accounted for because Storm Mountain Ranch is inherently part of a larger 35 acre tracked. So you're
the
taking what
says,
the what the
treat
high, so,
it as
on,
a standalone parcel.
Can I just
excuse me? I would just remind you. I think you're speaking to us.
Okay.
You don't need to argue with Mr. Peterson in this setting. Your arguments are to us.
Okay.
Thank you.
So my issue with that statement is that if you're focusing on this surplus land issue, then all of a sudden you're comparing. You're taking what's really not in existence. We're forced to take this 1 to 2 acre piece that's not in existence in real life. And the only way you can really do that is to use a smaller acre piece. I'm not suggesting that we can go off and dramatically adjust something. That's not what I'm suggesting at all. And I think that the reason that this assessor picked these larger acre pieces and did this analysis was because if you use the smaller acreage parcels, which do exist, there are vacant sites in the county area that do represent what a 1 to 2 acre piece is worth, and they were completely ignored. If you take them, it inherently gets you to a value that is unsatisfactory to the assessor. So the selection of these 5 acre pieces is arbitrary, and there's no, and it's, you're getting into the area which the Department of Property Taxation was trying to avoid, which is...
That didn't help us much, but...
They didn't, but they were trying to create a very... by focusing on size. If we just... And the testimony at those hearings was, if we just use 1 to 2 acres parcels, if we just use 1 to 2 acre parcels, that will reflect the value of this one building.
We did not hear that.
So I
even called the Division of Property Taxation on the argument from Michaela. I'm using 2 acres or less, and the sales we were using, and Kurt Settle, the deputy property tax administrator in charge of appraisal standards for the division, says, yes, you make an adjustment for surplus land. So nowhere in the statute does it say you have to stay under 2 acres.
So I'm going to move us on here. I think we understand. Clearly you disagree. I think we understand what your disagreement is, I don't know that we need to continue arguing about that. At this moment, I'd like to ask the commissioners if you feel like you have a sense of where we want to go, or if you have further questions, clarifications that we need in order to make this determination today.
A different type of question, a little bit. So
go ahead.
This also has some Kiowa stuff in it, common area stuff included,
yes,
on each of the lots. I mean, as well.
And I'm sorry. So will you clarify what you're referring to?
The
subject properties?
All of these subject properties have some common area interest included in them.
The jet black allocation.
The jet black, okay. They thank you very much. The jet black allocation. But they're not getting taxed on that twice, are they not? Because we've already elaborated on the fact that these are going to be in a higher tier, and they're not going to be at the tier of some other places. So I just want to make sure we're not doubling up here. Do you understand my question?
Yes, I do understand.
Yes, we're not doubling up.
So we chose sales that do not have common area. Even like the cabin sales that I referred to earlier, the 0.4 acres, they do not include the membership. You have to purchase that separately. So.
Okay. And so then when you come up with your values, you come up with the value of the lot, and then the common area interest is added on to that?
Yeah.
Not into the building envelope.
No, not in the building envelope.
Oh,
it's a separate,
okay,
like a
that's
model.
That's the jet black allocation.
So, okay.
The building envelope is absent of the amenities associated with Storm Mountain Ranch. That's why we're not using the Marabou sales, because their common elements are so extensive, much like Storm Mountain would be a great comparable property. Certainly somebody looking at Storm Mountain is looking at Marabou. That is a competing property to Storm Mountain Ranch, and that's the comp you would use. A lot of those are 5-acre lots. 5 acres is not much difference from 1 or 2 acres. All these, you got
that's
the big common area around.
Minimum lot size for the septic.
Yeah, and their density level is about 35, 37 acres at Marabou. Storm Mountain is 42, I want to say is what it is. I can't remember the number now. And that was a discussion with the division. That's why we don't use the Marabou sales. If we use the Marabou sales, that indication would be about $1 million on it. So,
but we don't.
But we
do
don't
not.
Use
okay.
it.
No.
So I guess
does that answer
question. Yeah, it answered my question. I guess so. Okay. Are we want to? We're not going to solve this problem today. So at all. So and again, I don't know. It's been very educational. But I see you guys sitting across the table from us. But I think we're going to be probably spending some people are going to be spending some more quality time together to come up with an acceptable approach here to figure out. You know, we knew this was a problem when the legislation got passed in the first place. We asked how it was going to work and the whole thing. None of us are trying to tab you guys or whatever, the Storm Mountain. We're trying to just do what fair and equalization are. And again, everybody paying their fair share or having their fair share allocated. It's just the it's the math and how you come up with the math and what pretenses you're using to do that. So, you know, at that point in time, I think we've kind of exercised our time here a little bit.
My comments would be, while I appreciate the work that Mr. Clayton did based upon the parameters that he put around it, it still, to me, defies common sense that we would be comparing some of these properties apples to apples basis with Storm Mountain Ranch properties. Sounds like there may be a legitimate disagreement about the methodology that the assessor used and the way you think the assessor should have done it, but I'm persuaded that the assessor's method is rational to me, and I could accept the assessor's recommendation.
Yes. All of the above. I think I would agree that there should be the consideration of the value of the property is critical, and these 1 acre lots in Rouse County they're incredibly rare. And as you've spoken to, the Storm Mountain Branch 1 acre property doesn't even exist. It's a hypothetical property, and comparing some of these, as Mr. Peterson talked about, they're just not the same. They're even though they are 1 acre, they're not comparable. And so I would support what Commissioner Corrigan said. I also think, you know, to Commissioner Monger's point, there are some questions here that are beyond what this board I think is prepared to know, you know, and so for that reason I would support our assessor's methodology. Predicting that there will be more conversation about that to come.
So I guess
any other comments
question,
to that? I don't know.
I guess the question is so we got some other problems involved here. So the one list that I've got, the hearing date was July 29th. The list, the 230,
yep. So that's the one we need. But there was one of those properties that should be excluded.
I actually figured out what happened. There's a typo on the. So when you wanted to exclude 816-4278, that should be 816-4274.
Did we miss one? Because that was on the. That's on the. This is what was submitted to the board.
Yeah.
It's this first one.
Yeah, this should have been 4.
So is that on there? Is the 4 already on? Did we miss one then?
No, you did it in in your.
So is the 7-4 that you're referring to, is that the Hechtman Trust property?
No, it's the Storm Mountain Ranch Association lot.
Oh, so I never. Oh, so it was a common area one.
Mm-hmm.
Because we just went. So.
Because there's
but the common area. Would be considered different.
It has non-integral building envelopes in it for the guest houses.
I mean, I guess it's the same argument. I didn't have it on the list that I submitted that I saw.
And we don't have what their values are.
It's the same. It's all the same argument.
I guess the question that I have. So we still have the Hechtman Trust.
You can take that one off.
Off.
The Hechtman property is not being appealed. Is that correct?
It's a vacant parcel. It's not subject to the house.
That should have been 7.
I understand that. I understand what you're saying. I'm just clarifying for the record that the Hechtman Trust property is not, the valuation of that is not being appealed.
Correct.
Okay.
So the motion should not include that.
So the motion should not include that account number. And am I?
But it does need to include this 8-6.
It was part of
2-4-7-4.
7-4.
Correct.
Okay.
7-4.
And again, we're all good. You preserve this evidence for the conversation on it and all the rest of it. Make sure we do it right. So. Okay.
I'm ready.
Hold on. I'm glad it's your turn.
Sorry. Wait, this is Jerry. Go ahead.
Schedule number 4278, the Hechtman property, was part of the assessor level appeal, which was denied. And it was brought to the CBOE level. I don't think we have a...
We
don't have an assessor level appeal on the common area parcel, so that cannot be part of the CBOE determination.
Let me look at my...
That's the 2474 number?
Correct. Yes, he is.
Paper.
I know.
Right? Yeah, I didn't get a set.
But look at how much paper it is. I will say that we have an 800-page packet.
We have an assessor level appeal on 4278, which is the Hechtman property.
Okay, and not on 4274.
They never attached the front page of the NOB to their appeal, so all we have is the backside and whatever account number they type. So we don't even have an assessor level appeal in the common area. They would have to file an abatement on that one, too.
Okay. Well, we'll figure this all out and then do that.
Okay, so clarify then, the motion should include the numbers on this document.
Right.
We agree with
that? Fine.
Okay, thank you.
All good.
All right.
Madam Chair, regarding the account numbers that are listed in on our fact packet, page 149, page 332 of 468, I move that we approve them. I move that we deny those 14 appeals and affirm the assessor's valuation on those property levels, and that's basically it.
Do we feel like we have a full understanding of the account numbers?
Yeah, so I referred to it again for our package.
Will you just hand a copy of that page to Deanna so we can make sure we all agree on which numbers we're looking at?
Starts off with R3205567 and ends in R8162478.
I think for the record, you should be reading off the building envelope value, which is the what's being contested on each one. Saying you're upholding.
Can you refer to the page where we
were? Beforehand, Commissioner Martin.
No, we have a spreadsheet.
Let's take a second on that, and then we can read that in the section there. If that's all right.
Do you need a second?
I don't think we have a second yet.
Well, I haven't given you a second.
Need a highlighted column for building envelope.
We can put it in the motion too. Okay. That's fine with me.
So okay. This is the so value we're affirming. Okay, so that'll be part of my motion to affirm the building envelope value that's being listed in this Exhibit 6.
Second.
I think Gary's wanting this right into the record.
Oh, really?
Really?
That was my recommendation.
R205567 is $390,000. R8165860 is $330,000. R816-5355 is $330,000. R816-4275 is $600,000. R816-4276 is $600,000. R816-4279 is $600,000. R816-4281 is $600,000. R816-5857 $600,000. R816-4283 $630,000. R816-4284 $540,000. Excuse me. R816-4285 $684,000. R816-5318 $708,000. R816-4280 is $510,000. And the R816-4278 is zero.
We have a correction. You misread the Peterson account, which is in the middle there. It's $660,000. You read it as $600,000.
Okay. R816-4281, $660,000. Can she have this too?
Sure.
Yep.
I second the amended motion.
All right. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you all.
Thank you.
We can ask him.
I think we only have one more, don't we? Or do we have
two? No, he's representing three properties.
Oh, okay.
We have a
okay.
hotel, we have a one steamboat place, and a Lake Catamount.
Yes. Okay.
Well,
thank you.
Property.
Bring him over, I guess. Thank you.
So you'll have.
It's just the whole.
Just the,
So there's a hotel.
Are you still on? Still on the phone line?
Might have to call him back.
That would be is enough to. And they couldn't fall asleep.
Is he on hold?
Are you still? No, huh?
To hold him.
Are you still on the phone?
Yeah.
Okay, well, good. So I'm going to turn this over to Commissioner Melton. She's our chair. Just poorly running the phone.
Ask him if he has a preference which one we go first or
can you,
if we choose.
I'm sorry, can you state your name for us, please?
Christian Benson with Ryan LLC.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear your name.
Christian Begner with Ryan LLC.
That's Christian, and will you spell your last name for our minute taker, please?
Sure. S-E-G-N-E-R.
Segner?
Thank you. And do you have a preference on which of these properties we start with?
Yes, because I only did the residential property. My colleague is doing the Fairfield.
Okay, great. So we will, is that Indian Meadows? Is that, or no?
Can we start with Lake Catamount?
There's two residential.
Yeah.
And is your colleague on the line too?
Sorry, you broke up there. What did you say?
Because since we're going to swear in. So, is your colleague on the line as well? Because we have to swear you in, and we'd like to swear both of you in and not swear you in and swear us.
She called a few minutes ago and didn't get an answer. Should I tell her to call again?
Yes, please text her and have her call on again right now if she could.
Is that right? Yeah, that's fine. Will you... Can you let me know which one? Great. Thank you very much. We'll wait just a moment then. What number?
Okay.
What number?
R816-46666.
Hi, Michelle. You're here. You're live.
Perfect.
Will you spell your last name for our minute taker, please?
Yes. So it's Michelle, and then last name is Tarbell. T is in Tom, A-R, C is in boy, E-L-L.
Thank you. So we're going to go ahead and get started here.
Do we still have the gentleman on still on yet?
Christian? Is Christian still here? Oh, here we go. I think I know what to do. Hold on. This phone. Hello, Christian?
Yes.
Okay, and then do we Good still job. Have Michelle?
We do, yes.
Great.
Good
Success
job.
At bringing the two of you together. Small victories. Okay, so we're ready. We're going to start with the appeal for schedule number R816-4666, which is lot 23, Lake Catamount. And so the first order of business is to swear in the petitioners. So we'll all swear in both of you in at the same time. And the assessor's office is, I'll remind you that you're still under oath. So do you swear that the testimony you are about to give is the truth to the best of your knowledge?
I do.
Thank you very much. So I'm going to make some introductory comments regarding this proceeding. The issue of today's proceeding is property valuation and or classification for assessment purposes, not property taxes. No discussion of taxes will be allowed. The assessor's office must produce information to support the basis and amount of the assessor's valuation of the property or classification if that is what is being contested. Where the comparable sales method is used, state statute provides that the assessor will determine value based on sales during the 18-month period ending June 30, 2018. Sales may also be considered in 6-month increments immediately preceding the 18-month period up to 5 years if there are insufficient sales to obtain accurate comparable valuation data. Smaller counties commonly use a 24-month period in order to obtain sufficient comparable sales data that better demonstrates the change in value from the prior level of value, June 30th, 2016. The 24-month period also eliminates seasonality from the sales data. Rock County uses a 24-month data collection period. The petitioner and the assessor should not discuss sales post June 30th, 2018, except in cases where it can be demonstrated that a contract for sale was completed prior to June 30th, 2018 and closed after June 30th, 2018. According to the original contract. Under Colorado law, the present value of your property cannot be considered. The petitioner shall present his or her evidence first and have the opportunity to cross-examine the representatives from the assessor's office after they have presented their evidence. The decision of this board may be appealed, and we will refer to that after the decision or motion has been made. So we'll go ahead and begin with the petitioner. So, Michelle, I believe that's you.
Michelle's the tax agent on the hotel.
I'm sorry?
Correct.
That's correct. Christian,
okay, thank you.
Will address property.
Okay, so Christian.
Should we maybe call Michelle back or have her call in after we address the two residentials?
Yeah, that'd be fine.
That's fine. Michelle, if you'd like to drop off the line and we can give you a call back when we're ready to look at the residential stuff.
Do we have her number?
That's great. Yeah, I'll give you my number if that's okay.
Yes, please.
It's 303-212-1861.
Can you repeat that one again, please?
Yes, 303-222-1861.
1861. Got it.
Okay. You broke up at different times in the number each time you said it. So.
Okay.
All right. We'll go ahead and give you a call back when we're ready for yours. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. So.
Here.
I think we have Christian.
Yeah.
Perfect. Yes. Please go ahead and begin.
Okay, so the property in question, 29250 County Road 18, Steamboat Springs, Colorado. The assessor value for 2019, $6,176,970. Ryan's opinion of value, $2,507,460.
So, I'm sorry, hold on just a second. We are discussing lot 23, Lake Catamount. So this is account number R8164666. So the numbers that you just stated, I'm not sure where those are. Those are not the numbers that I have in front of me for this.
I know what they did.
Okay.
Gotcha.
Can you clarify?
We have two total parcels that act as one economic unit together owned by the same main owner.
So I'm going to ask the assessor's office just to provide some clarifying information.
I would ask the tax agent to explain how they act as a single economic unit.
Tell them what's going on.
So
it is owned by the same person, and together they view it as one economic unit.
So they're combining the two values.
Can you speak up?
They're combining the value that I have placed on the Lake Catamount 7,600 square foot house with the one Steamboat Place condo.
So we have to consider these separately. We can't consider these.
They're not adjoining.
They're not even in the same.
One's a condominium, one's a single-family house, one's in the county, one's
okay.
in the city.
We understand.
There's
so,
no way that you would consider them an economic unit in appraisal.
Yeah.
We can't consider those together. So are you prepared to discuss those two separately?
And the values of them?
Okay, so there must have been a mistake. We do not wish to appeal the second parcel, just the one on Lake Catamount.
Okay, so just for clarification, we're discussing account number R8164666, and this is at lot 23 at Lake Catamount. Okay, and we're what I see in our information here is that the assessor value on that property was $3.826,180,000. That was a weird way to say that, but $3,826,180, and that's the valuation that we're discussing today.
Yes, and our value would be the same that we provided. It seems that we added another parcel in there by mistake.
So I'm sorry, you're requesting what value on that property?
$2,507,450.
I thought it was
$1.5 million. The appeal form states $1,554,625.
Will you say that number again, please?
$2,507,000.
No, I'm sorry. I think we have to use the appeal form. Am I correct in that?
If he wants to give us a new...
Can I clarify? Are you requesting a different value than you placed on your appeal form?
I believe he's asking...
I didn't fill that out. That was our admin person. They must have made a mistake.
So it shouldn't matter anyhow. He's appealing the valuation.
Okay.
So we have to come asking. Up with
But we need to
value.
Understand what value he's requesting, I think.
Okay. Yeah.
So I'm sorry. Just regardless of, so I understand maybe there was an error in your document. Can you state for us again the valuation that you believe should be placed on this property?
Sure. $2,507,460.
Thank you. And so go ahead and share your evidence for that value of $2,507,460.
I thought I said $3 million.
So for this valuation, we just provided one comparable sale, 32625 Hudspeth Lane, Steamboat Springs. A very similar piece of land, 500 square feet, and this lot is 35 acres, subject to 38 acres. And we had a sale for $2.3 million in May of 2017 in the middle of the data collection period. And we wanted to appeal this property to present this sale as well as the county's documentation for their value. The client believes that their valuation is high, and we wanted to do a little fact-finding mission to find out where that value is from.
Point of information, Madam Chair.
We have a question from the commissioner. Hold on, please.
Just looking at the form that was submitted for the appeal, I just want to be sure, is there evidence that I should be looking at that I'm not finding, or is the evidence being presented just what we're hearing verbally right now?
Evidence was provided.
It was provided at the assessor level.
And so it was not included in our packet?
He did not include it the second time.
So just for the petitioner's information, the commissioners here are operating at a little bit of a disadvantage because we don't have any written documentation supporting the appeal that you're making at this time. So bear that in mind as you present your evidence.
No, I think there's the same sale, so it will be presented.
Okay, so the sale that you're referencing, it sounds like, is included in the assessor's information.
The staff
so
packet, if we the staff need, packet that we have. Okay.
So if we needed to take a look at that that sale in particular, we could look at that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
That's all the evidence that I wanted to present. We have that sale that seemed very comparable. And we wanted to see the assessor's evidence, and we have not received that at this point.
All right. Thank you very much. The assessor's information, they can share with you, I think, how that is shared with you.
I think
you,
I understand
you.
What we're doing now.
We'll go ahead and let the assessor's office speak. Thank you.
So, at assessor level appeal, what I received was a protest combining the Lake Catamount property with the One Steamboat Place, combining the values, which I took some adding and subtracting to figure out where that number came from, and also a combined requested value of the 2.5, which I'm assuming somehow they wanted it split between the One Steamboat Place and the Lake Catamount. So that was all I received. At assessor level, I did receive a printout from Zillow.com of the property.
Can I ask you to pause for just a second? I'm really sorry. I see that Commissioner Munger and I are both scrolling through our packets trying to figure out where we are. So let's just make sure that let's get us all there before we get started. So
I would say it's the one that I found is titled Steamboat Hotel. But
so which property are we listed? Lot 23?
Lot 23.
Lot 23.
Okay, it's on
Lake
page
Catamount.
460.
Okay, Beth, thank 460. You. 460.
That's where her report comes in.
Sorry, we... I gotcha.
We're saving a tree here, and we're just trying to get by. We haven't saved the tree and finding it, so... Anyhow.
Never saving a tree ever again. Just joking.
Okay, so I think...
Yeah, please go ahead.
Okay, so at the assessor levels, there was... It was a confusing what they were wanting, and also the sale provided, it really just was a printout of the Zillow. It didn't say when the sale happened or anything. So at that level, I did deny it because I wasn't clear on how they wanted that value broken out between the two properties. And then at the CDOE appeal level, that I received a different value. I received a requested value of $1,565, and so that's what I am working off of, is that requested value. The comparable sale that you provided at the assessor level wasn't included at the CBOE level. I requested to view the property on July 18th, 2019 to get inside so I can make sure I'm using, you know, good comparables for that property. I also followed it up with a conversation with Christian on July 23rd. He was requesting from the owner, but I never heard back, so I wasn't able to view it. So there were some assumptions that I had to make that the property was still in the same state. Now, the subject property is a 5-bedroom, 6-bath home located in the Lake Catamount subdivision. Its total square footage is 7,661 feet, has a finished basement. I looked at some new construction notes that were in our account from 2002 when it was built. It's a custom stick-built house with an attached 2-car garage, excellent grade, 3 custom fireplaces, a large open grate room, and these notes were from when Gary Peterson was the appraiser for that area. Looking at the sales history of the subject property, it was purchased in the 2017 reappraisal on August 26, 2015, for a time-adjusted sale price of $4,945,000. It was not listed on the MLS, so I did not get to see inside of the interior finishes. I did contact and talk to a listing realtor during the 2017 sales confirmation, and he did say it was a fair market transaction, fair market price. So my certain assumptions that I made was that there was nothing that devastated the property from 2015 when it was purchased for $4.9 million to warrant a price of $1.5 million.
So can I, quick yeah. question, it did sell in the period of that?
No, in 2017.
It sold?
Yes.
So in the previous appraisal period?
They purchased it for in 2017, okay. not 2015, which we can look back, you know.
Yep. Okay.
Yep. Overall, I did look at four comparables on page 3 of my report. One in Sydney Peak, comp 2, the sale that he is referencing, lot 36, which is an inferior property. It's a very good grade versus the excellent grade homes based on our grading system. And then I have pictures of the comps on page 4 to 6, as well as a map of where the comparables are. The property does fall within the range of the comparable sales, and given no other information to go on, I recommend denying the petitioner and upholding our value of 3.8.
It looks like 3,283,230.
Yes,
is that correct? And that, which is 484 per square foot.
Yes.
Okay.
And so, just to point something out, just on my comparable sale grid on page 3 of my report, the way that I look at agricultural properties is I apply as if it was non-ag to make sure that value is good, and then the ag discount kind of gets applied. So if it was non-ag, it would be valued at $4,372,980. And then the 3.8 is with the agricultural land.
So just to be clear, on this particular account number, the value that you've assigned is the $3,826,180?
Yes, as an agricultural property.
Different number than I was looking at, just to make sure we're talking about the same number here.
Right, because you're looking at this number on the spreadsheet. Right.
Got it. Okay, so Commissioner Corrigan's correct. Okay. Okay, thank you.
Can I see that?
Yeah, so we have to insert a full market value on the land, take out the ag value.
I understand.
To start comparing it to other properties.
And then just to clarify that I understand this correctly, your comp 2 is the property being referenced by the petitioner today. Is that
yes.
correct?
Okay. Yes.
Thank you.
And then again, you've addressed that discrepancy by using 4 comps.
Yes.
To arrive at an average number.
So what's the ag out here on this property? They put up a couple bales of hay.
It's not integral. So let's get a building envelope.
The building envelope is a non-integral?
Yes.
And it's valued as such?
Yes. And that non-integral?
$450,000. If it was not ag, it would be $1 million.
I understand your methodology. Yeah, that's fine. Okay. I understand.
The full 38 acres would be $1 million.
Do either of you have questions that you'd like to ask?
No, I think I'm persuaded that the appellant is relying too much upon a single sale that is not fully comparable, and that the assessor's office has provided enough comparable sales to uphold their evaluation. And as such, I'd be ready to make a motion.
Good.
One other just point of clarification. I did not give the petitioner an opportunity to ask questions of the assessor's office.
Sorry.
So let's go ahead and do that.
Yep.
And before we move forward. So, Christian, that you have an opportunity to ask questions of the assessor's office, if you wish.
The only comment that I have is that I have not received any evidence from the assessor, so I am not able to analyze their sale.
The letter you get scheduling the hearing date and time, at the end of that letter it states that our evidence is posted online and where you go to get it.
So, and then I would also tell you that all the evidence is in our fact packet for today, for our meeting packet, and if you go to our website and then pick up the meeting agenda, the PDF file for Monday today, the 29th. And if you go to page 460,
460, it starts off your packet that will have all that information.
No, he won't have that.
He'll get the PDF.
He gets there's a hyperlink.
Oh, I understand that, but he can look at it right now.
But the four pages,
it won't be page 460.
Mean anything to him.
This is our agenda.
No, that's not the way it gets posted online, though.
So, hold on.
That's where I'm at, is on the online agenda.
Oh,
hold on.
Regardless,
the packet is online. It was posted there, I believe, probably Thursday. Is that correct, Deanna? And so that's the same information that we have in front of us that was available to you, and your letter refers to that.
Okay.
Madam Chair, in the matter of account number R8164666, I move that we deny the petitioner's request for a lowered valuation and uphold the original assessor's value of $3,826,180.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. The decision of the board may be appealed to the Route County District Court, to the State Board of Assessment Appeals, or through an arbitration process. You'll be sent a letter informing you of the board's decision and your rights concerning that appeal process. Can someone let me know what we're looking at next?
Kristen, we're going to keep you on the line and do the second residential, which is the One Steamboat Place condominium.
That was appealed in error, so I wish to withdraw that one.
All right. The petitioner's stated that he's withdrawing that petition. Do we need a motion, or we can?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm good with that.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
And so I think then we need to call back Michelle. Are you, Christian, are you staying on the line or not?
I'm not.
Okay, so we'll just hang up with you and call her then.
Okay.
All right, thank you very much.
So which one are we doing next?
The Fairfield Inn Hotel.
Do I have to dial?
Which is listed under ownership.
Yeah, do you have to dial 8 out here, yeah.
Deanna?
Yeah.
Do we have
to
dial
8 out of here, right?
Hotels.
I never remember.
Pretty sure you do.
Okay.
Is that the Indian Meadows?
Yes.
Yes. Five. Yep. Okay, thank
yep.
you.
That's it.
And it's just that one, right?
Yes.
Oh, sounds like success.
These people get paid. This is Michelle.
Hi, Michelle. This is the Route County Board of Commissioners sitting as the Board of Equalization. We are prepared. We're ready to get started. Are you ready?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Let me, and when I say I'm ready, I mean I need a second to pull this up. Hold on.
and to remind you, too, Michelle, that we already sworn you in once.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll get started. You guys, you ready? Okay.
Yep.
So we're hearing the appeal for schedule number R8163677, Lot 5, Indian Meadows. And so we've already sworn in the petitioner, and I'll remind the representatives from the assessor's office that they are also under oath. So I'm going to make a few introductory comments. I should have had you stand when I made these before. I didn't think of it. So the issue of today's proceeding is property valuation and or classification for assessment purposes, not property taxes. No discussion of taxes will be allowed. The assessor's office must produce information to support the basis and amount of assessor's valuation of the property or classification if that is what is being contested. Where the comparable sales method is used, state statute provides that the assessor will determine value based on sales during the 18-month period ending June 30th, 2018. Sales may also be considered in 6-month increments immediately preceding the 18-month period up to 5 years if there are insufficient sales to obtain accurate comparable valuation data. Smaller counties commonly use a 24-month period in order to obtain sufficient comparable sales data that better demonstrates the change in value from the prior level of value, June 30th, 2016. The 24-month period also eliminates seasonality from the sales data.
Rao County uses a 24-month data collection period. The petitioner and the assessor should not discuss sales post June 30th, 2018, except in cases when it can be demonstrated that a contract for sale was completed prior to June 30th, 2018 and closed after June 30th, 2018, according to the original contract. Under Colorado law, the present value of your property cannot be considered. The petitioner shall present his or her evidence first and shall have the opportunity to cross-examine the representatives from the assessor's office after they have presented their evidence. The decision of this board may be appealed, and we will refer to that after the decision or motion has been made. So the petitioner is present via phone. We have documentation that was submitted by the petitioner prior, and we reviewed that. So you can, Michelle, go ahead and present your evidence to us.
Okay, great. Thank you all for your time today. The property that we're discussing is a Fairfield Inn and Suites in Steamboat Springs. The address is 3200 South Lincoln Avenue. On the second page of our analysis is a photo of the subject and an aerial picture. And on page three of our analysis is kind of a summary of facts of the property. It has 66 rooms and was built in 1999. We looked at both actual income and also did a pro forma income analysis to get to our value, which is $5,400,000 or $81,818 per room. Page four of our analysis is our pro forma is our actual income approach. We looked at both the year-end 2018 income statement as well as the year-end 2017 income statement. And we've included those income statements, which I believe begin on page 10 of this packet. That's where these numbers are pulled from. But the specifics we built in on the 2018 year-end income, we determined an appropriate cap rate of 8% and loaded that with the effective tax rate of 1.45%. And that indicated a value of $5,628,018. We subtracted, I believe this was 2018 personal property value of $55,000, and that resulted in our opinion value with actual income of $5,570,000. We also looked at pro forma income, which is on the next page five of our analysis. For this, we looked at trying to figure out what we did here. So on this page, we started with the average daily rate of $137.47, which corresponds to the year-end 2008 income statement. The occupancy at year-end 18 was 6.9%, and the corresponding revenue per available room was $95.26. That was our starting point for the potential room income. We then subtracted the vacancy of 30.1%. And then we used figures from a CBRE trends in hotel reports for 2018, which is on six of our analysis. So the operating expenses we have listed in our forma income approach correlate with the CBRE trends report for 2018. We did add an additional 3% for franchise fees, and that we've supported with page 7 and 8 of our analysis. This is part of the CRE trends report, but Just want to point out page 8 at kind of the bottom right. It talks about sales and marketing that the CBRE trends report, that expense item that they include, and at kind of at the very end of that sales marketing paragraph, they do say in this report, and we've underlined it, that it does not include payments made for reservation services or systems. That is an expense that hotels would have every year, and so that's why we've added 3% in that franchise fees. Also for our actual income and also for this income, we do subtract 5% replacement reserves. This got us to an NOI that we capped at the same 8% unloaded, the effective tax rate making it 9.45%. And again, we subtracted what I believe was the 18 personal property of $55,000. That arrived at a value of $5,224,000. And so we reconciled the pro forma income approach with the actual income approach to arrive at that opinion of value of $5.4 million. And then just kind of the pages beyond the pro forma income approach, we do include the year in 2018 and 17. Operating statements, they're both actually included on just the year in 18 because it has last year's actual income. And then we also at the very end include the STAR report that's dated January 2019 for this hotel. And that's all I have.
Thank you. Commissioners, do you want to ask any questions before we turn it over to the assessor's office?
Yeah, I'm good with it, but I hope that there was a lot of meat just there that she gave us,
yeah.
So I hope that we can decipher out the things that we're in conflict with as we move forward here to keep our, thank you, sorry.
Yeah, I think if we could focus on the things that we agree, that the assessor's office is not in agreement on, that would help us to understand what we're discussing today.
Sure.
Go ahead. Yes, thank you very much.
I'd like to do just a brief history of the property, evaluation, sale prices, and so forth, and talk a little bit about it. One correction that needed to be made on the first page of the report that I submitted, seventh line down, I have 2017 regional assessor value. That's actually 2019 assessor value. It was at $7,048,930, and at assessor level appeals, it was adjusted downward to $6,735,690. And I'd like to, just to give you all, and do this quickly, a brief introduction to what's called the Rushmore approach. The DPT endorses this approach. They teach it at the state level. Most fee appraisers recognize it and utilize it in fee appraisals. This gentleman here, this is just so you, just a brief, quick look. Stephen Rushmore is the guy's name. Yeah, no, don't even look at it, but his name is Stephen Rushmore. He's the founder of HVS, which is a hotel evaluation lodging service, international service that's highly recognized. The buyer of the property to finance the sale of the property back in 2015. At that time, the property sold was purchased for $7 million. During the 2017 reappraisal, we had used it as a sale, as well as three others that occurred in town. they don't happen very often. It's really critical to still look at those sales. But anyway, it was adjusted down from $7 million to $6,699,000. Deducting going concern and FF&E personal property. I want to direct you to the report that I submitted, and it would actually be page 22 of my report. Mm-hmm. Are you all there? That there is the HVS summary page to a very detailed appraisal report done for financing of the purchase on the property. And I just wanted to point out at that time the very gentleman that the state endorses as far as his approach, his company valued this property, and I don't know if it's highlighted on yours, but in yellow,
yes,
I have down
it
here,
is.
Okay, that it was valued at $6,720,000 for the real property and $480,000 for the personal property. So I just want to establish
that. On whose behalf did he provide that report?
For the lender.
Thank you.
Yes. And this report was provided, provided to me at the BAA level on the last go-round, 2017. So I just wanted to establish that. If you would turn to... We'll go to the income approach of my report.
So, just to clarify, mm-hmm. the Rushmore approach and the income approach are different from one another.
They are actually the same thing.
Okay.
The Rushmore approach is methodology using direct capitalization, the same overall cap rate or loaded like we do in ad valorem. The main difference about it is that it, in detail, it segments where expenses are identified and how they're deducted.
Okay.
And as long as everybody follows the same recipe, everything should be consistent across the board.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
So where are you taking?
Okay. Step? We're going to take you to page 11, figure 4A.
Okay.
I'm there.
It's going to look like this here.
We're on the redacted version.
I'm on the redacted version.
What are you guys doing on the redacted version?
Well, remember how our packet is 860 pages long?
So it's in the packet file, though, if you go to...
The actual packet.
Right, so we need to find
it's
it
online.
In there.
Okay. Can we just pick up a copy of this? Is that the only one we're looking
at? Yeah, you can do that. You can do that.
That are redacted.
Yeah, you
just
do that.
Two pages.
Yeah. So you're going to do this page, you're going to do that page.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, I think we have enough copies.
He's making more.
Okay.
When you say it's on our...
You give
oh, it's
copy?
On our internal server.
Our internal server.
You did?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we... I can't access that when I'm on the wireless.
Right. Same here.
Sorry, I didn't know.
It's that. All right. We probably need to do some work on figuring out how to get these packets to not be so burdensome.
We have these guys email us the redacted
we
version.
We could do that.
Unredacted.
The unredacted version, yes.
Yeah. That's fine, too.
We can figure it out.
Well, yeah, she could do that.
Yeah.
We send her both copies. Two reports, the redacted and the unredacted report.
Yep.
I can email you it.
No, you know what? We'll deal with it later.
Yeah, we can just talk about it more broadly.
So this is where you're going to be starting us?
Yes.
Okay.
So I actually think that the version you sent us was still redacted. So I think that might have just been a mistake.
Well, so the version I sent you should have been
no,
redacted.
Sorry, the version on the T drive.
Oh, did you get to it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that should have been redacted because that was just taken from the website and then I added the original documents into that folder. There's a saved separate.
I see, it's separate from that document. Okay, I didn't realize that when we looked at it. Steamboat Hotel Investor Staff Packet. Okay, got it. Now I understand. What page are we on? 11.
I can pull it up.
Got it.
I should have pulled. Commissioner Munger. Yeah, I got it right here.
So this is... It's the income method?
Yes, it is.
That you have chosen to value this property?
Yeah, which is consistent across the state.
Rather than comparable sales, rather than
I have also done that. I did all three approaches, but I'm focusing on this because the petitioner is utilizing that. And
okay.
Kevin 4B, clarified for us.
4B, 4A, A, 4A, 4A. Okay.
So Kevin just clarified that he used all three methods, but that he's focusing on the income method because that's what was used by the petitioner.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
All right. And the next thing I want to do, keep that page handy. I'll try to be as brief and quick as I can on this. If you could go to the petitioner's submittal, it's about the sixth page in, the income analysis where she's capitalizing the value based on 2018 income. So it's going to look like this.
Okay.
This page.
So it's in the petitioner's response?
Yeah, I don't have a page number on it. I'll give it to you. I believe it's six pages in.
Sure. Hold it up again so I can see. Yeah, got it.
Okay.
Is it, sorry, hold it up for me again.
Right
what
here.
Page is that, Tim?
It would be on page 4.
Per the numbers that are printed on it, not on the PDF.
Correct. Okay. Yeah.
Did you find it, Doug?
Right hand corner.
Okay, go on.
Okay.
Tell us.
So on this page, she is doing direct capitalization, and it essentially is the Rushmore method, the way things are broken out. It's not quite in the same detail as what I've done on that spreadsheet on that prior image that I was showing you. But the first thing I want to recognize is that in this, she is capitalizing to 2018 income, which it really is trailing income because it goes beyond the effective date, the value. I am using the 2017 because it's a complete full year-end analysis of what actually happened on that. And
the 2017 is what's also included in the petitioner's document.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Okay. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And I'd also like to take you to, I'm sorry, but it's necessary to understand the full story. There's also back, several pages back, this is where it's got Steamboat on the top, where the actual breakdown of the actual income for 2018 and for 2017 is listed. Do you see that page there?
On their stuff or yours?
It's their submission.
First,
yeah.
Okay. I have a page number.
Those things were numbered, so down the bottom.
Right there.
This is still okay.
Yeah.
So you
got
to highlight.
Yeah. So there's a number over there.
10.
Thank you.
Okay.
Are you guys there?
Yep. Go ahead.
Got it.
Okay. So I'm looking at the 2017 because it is a full year within the period, and it's very detailed. And I have essentially have lifted those numbers and put it into my approach, the Rushmore method, just to show how it calculates out. And in this particular breakdown, it lists the real estate taxes, which you can do this capitalization either way as long as you calculate the same way on both sides of the equation. And what I mean by that is when you're calculating the expenses, you can include the real estate taxes. And when you're all done dividing the NOI by the overall cap rate, or you can leave the taxes out and divide by the loaded cap rate.
Just don't do it opposite, right?
Right. You don't mix and match on that. The petitioner did it with the loaded cap rate. So in looking at this, This does list the real estate taxes as one of the expenses, and if you go to the center column down to NOI, it lists an NOI of $501,949. That is lifting the real estate taxes out. So if we're going to be consistent and do it the way the petitioner submitted, the way that I followed along with what she was doing, we're going to add those real estate taxes back in. And in doing that, we're going to go back to the first page that Doug went and copied.
4A?
4A.
So you're, just so I make sure I understand, you're using the numbers that were, the 2017 numbers that were submitted by the petitioner,
mm-hmm.
but you're adding the real estate taxes back in for consistency.
Yes.
With your method.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
So going through the Rushmore approach, the main thing of this, the meat of it is, if you look at the NOI of real property, it, in yellow there, it says $606,134. That's the same thing that is calculated on that detailed sheet we were just looking at.
Right there.
Got it.
Yes. Going back to her calculation of the income approach, I want to show you on page, that sixth page where she does the income calculation. And let's start with the 2018. But essentially, the information that she has provided is the same. If you look at the occupancy rate, ADR, RevPAR, that heading on the far left, and go down the column, those numbers are the same as what's in that detailed breakdown. It's the same for 2018. It's the same for 2017. The one thing of highlight I noticed in 2018 is there's a miscellaneous expense there of $112,300, and it just says miscellaneous. It's not detailed as to what it is, nor is it detailed in that detailed breakdown. And my suspicion on that is that it could be capital expenditures, which normally would be prorated out over a term of years, not all as a lump sum as expenses for the given year that we're capitalizing.
And $112,000 in 2018 at zero in 2017.
Yeah, in 2017 at zero. So that's one thing that I picked up on.
Okay.
Have an explanation for that that's legitimate, but I wanted to highlight that. And the other thing that I noticed between her income capitalization and what is in that breakdown is in both years, the reserve allocation, it is higher. On the breakdown in 2018, if you were to look at that, it's $90,979, but she has $116,954. In 2017, similar situation, it's listed as $84,611. And then she's actually using $110,174. In 2018, if you were to remove the $112,300 and go to the allocation that's provided in the actual, it gives us an NOI of $670,000, and it capitalizes using the loaded cap rate to $7,089,989. And a similar scenario with, I'm going to go back to, if you'd go back to the page that Doug copied off.
4A.
4A, please. So if you do it with what the breakdown is actually showing in detail on the back, the NOI of $606,134 capitalizes to $6,428,235, and then removing the personal property, which we had on record for the given year, the value using their actual approach does calculate $6,366,385. One thing that I've been finding in looking at these pro formas, the actual income, I'm getting it from other hotels, lodging entities in town. And in doing this Rushmore approach, I can put them on a spreadsheet horizontally, and I can compare each of these categories as to whether or not is something out of place or does it fit the mold, the median or the average of what's going on. So I, in figure 4B, the next page of the Rushmore method, there was a couple of things that I tweaked that were a little bit higher than what I was seeing with the other hotels in town that I received information on, both from the 2017 and 2019 periods. And I adjusted down the marketing, and that was from 3 to 2%, and then the base management fee from 6 to 5%. And some of them were actually showing even lower than that on both of those categories of what was going on with other hotels. And I had three other franchise hotels in town where I had that information, and one non-franchise. And, of course, Fairfield Inn is franchise. So I feel like it was representative, and they were pushing a little bit on that. When those two items are modified, you get a capitalized value of $6,825,489, and then you deduct the FF&E with a final capitalized value of $6,763,639. And historically, going back to what occurred in 2017, and at the BAA level, I did this method of comparing the various hotels and what they were reporting for their various expenses. And at that time, Fairfield Inn was showing unrealistically high the final expense ratio. At that time, it was 77%. The averages on the other hotels that I had were 65%. And that was the crux of my argument at the time. And so going into this go-round, I wanted to make sure, you know, we're looking at real expenses, and it seemed reasonable. And overall, it does. In the actual breakdown that was provided, when you put it in the Rushmore approach, it's pretty reasonable. You can tweak it a little bit and go from a final value of 6.4 to $6,800. But the problem I am having is with the way she's capitalizing it, one, using the entire 2018 year where we're past the period. So I think it's important to use 2017. It is, the expenses are a little bit different, and it does capitalize higher, but not by a whole lot, but it is different. So making those points, I just wanted to go back and just establish that the cost approach was done, and it's done consistently with how it was done back in 2017 for the last reappraisal. It came in at $6,886,955. The other thing that is crucial to look at is the fact that we have hotel or lodging sales, limited service sales that did occur during the 2017 reappraisal, but we are allowed by statute to go back in 6-year increments. Excuse me, 6-month increments. So going back 36 months, it includes those sales. It's really imperative to look at them, at least consider them, maybe just for test of reasonableness, because they don't happen often, and they're still within the realm of what's going on now. We did not measure a time trend for this reappraisal on the commercial properties, so that further supports the reasonableness of going back that far to look at those items. So my recommendation is to stick with the adjusted value at assessor level. And I did want to mention that in conversation with Michelle during the assessor level, she was asking me to go to $6 million. And I wouldn't do it because I felt like, you know, we had that historical appraisal, we had the transaction. The detail is still showing it's up over that. I feel it is at that level, the final adjusted level of $6,735,690. Yeah. And I'm just asking you to uphold that.
So, can I ask a question?
Yes, please do.
What I'm hearing is two things from you. you feel like the petitioner in their appeal used numbers from 2017 or from 2018 that was not appropriate, and using the more appropriate numbers from 2017, you came up with a higher valuation. But in addition to that, you questioned some of the other numbers that the petitioner were using as inappropriate.
The miscellaneous in particular.
The miscellaneous.
Yeah. Yeah, and also the reserves were different than what was reported on the actual. Everything else is reported the same, line by line.
Okay.
But you get there, on her summary and capitalization, it was modified.
Those are the items where you differ significantly from the petitioner.
Yes.
Okay. So, and the method for determining the value is not different, just those numbers?
Right, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We're both on the same cap rate and everything. So,
I guess I'm still asking, curious now. I mean, so which are you using, page B, 4B then, or is that what you're suggesting?
4B, yeah. I showed 4A without making any changes. This is what their actual detailed breakdown shows. This is what it would capitalize at using the cap rate we're in agreement on.
And using the 2017 numbers.
Yes. Going to 4B, I tweaked it a little bit because when I compare it to other lodging data I have, those were a little bit high.
The percentages. Mm-hmm.
So then on 4B, we have the final for the real estate is 6,763,639, correct?
Yes.
And so that isn't what was on the...
slightly different than the number
different
that's...
Because you had 6,735,639.
Your recommendation, Kevin?
Yes, yeah, let me explain that. The I rounded it to $6,765,000. When you go back and look at those sales.
When you say it, what do you mean you rounded?
I rounded the conclusion of the income approach on what Doug was just referring to. So if you go to page 13.
It's all right. I guess, and I was.
Yeah.
Because the number we got back to was actually with the appeal. It's 6,735.
Yeah. Yes, and what's happening is I've listed the sales comparison approach results and also the income approach, and with these two, both of them really are good data to be looking at, and I'm saying let the system calculate what it was. It's right in that range. It's set.
But to be clear, you are asking us to uphold your value of $6,735,690.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No. That's not what 4B is.
Well, it's slightly different, but it's only different.
Okay. Just so we get the right number.
Yeah.
So 4B is 6,763.
Right. And it's up here in the final reconciliation on page 13.
Okay. So he's rounded. Just so he's got the right number.
So Commissioner Corrigan has the number that you are requesting. Okay.
My agenda just died too. So.
All right. Any other questions you'd like to ask before I turn it back to the petitioner? No? No. Okay. Michelle, do you have any questions for the assessor's office or statements you'd like to make?
I do not have any questions. I guess I just wanted to make a statement that our actual income analysis, we did look at those year-end 2018 numbers, and I do agree, that only half that year is within the base period. So I do agree, with using the year-end 2017 numbers being the whole base period. And the other item that had come up, two other items, I guess, were that miscellaneous expense. I just want to address that I don't have any information other than, on page 21 of our analysis, that's where it shows that miscellaneous expense coming up. And I just want to now, it's about seven lines down. In the actual year in 2018 kind of column. I just want to point out that the budget has, it's zero, so it was an unexpected expense. It wasn't a planned expense, this is what I would infer. But I don't have, unfortunately, any additional information on what exactly that related to. And then the only other item that I know was different from county's analysis was our replacement reserves. We did choose 5% of revenue for replacement reserves. So that often in a hotel statement, sometimes they won't actually show their own replacement reserve. So they do here in these know that the county was relying on the actual replacement reserves, which were lower than 5%. But we used 5% in that we believe somewhere around 5% is kind of industry norm as replacement reserves.
You are when she.
I just wanted to point out that was the reason why we used 5%. You realize it doesn't correspond with the. And that's all I have.
Thank you very much. Other questions? Follow-up?
No. I'm inclined to agree with the assessor's office.
I am as well.
Madam Chair, I would move to deny the petitioners. Back up for a minute.
Make sure we have all the right numbers.
Yeah. Looks like it's scroll to the top here. In the matter of account number R816-3677, I would move to deny the petitioner's request to lower the 2019 RA assessor adjusted value to $5.4 million and uphold the assessor's level adjusted value of $6,735,690.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The decision of this board may be appealed to the Route County District Court, the State Board of Assessment Appeals, or through an arbitration process. You'll be sent a letter informing you of the board's decision and your rights concerning the appeal process. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Brain numbing after.
Oh my God.
I wanted to present it as quickly as possible.
No, you did.
No, that's it. Word turn.